Department of Health, I coming from the Chief of Staff and the Parliamentary Officers, and I will allow the Coordination Commissioner, Dr. Berikis Nassani, next to me to introduce his team.
Thank you, Chairperson Minister. So I'm Director of the Family Compensation Commissioner. With me is Dr. Bill Bursas, Acting Chief Operating Officer, Dr. Hassan Samachari, Head of the Certification Committee at the Medical Bureau for Occupational Services, which does the medical assessments, the Deputy Commissioner, Mr. Sam Muller, and the Director of Finance, Mr. Mishak Masungan. So that's the team from the Compensation Fund.
Are you? Oh, okay. No, it's fine. We will then allow the members to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Hanif Mami, a member of the Board of Quality Commission.
Committee member Walmart Jay.
Myself, member of the committee.
My name is Montan Sandu Vendava, a member of the Cultural Committee.
Bozulone, and I will tell you how to say that I'm a member of this committee.
Morning, I'm Chair Dazimuzi from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thank you very much. We have got some few apologies. One from Honorable Manchek, who is in the Personal Committee on Police. Mr. Kenza, Honorable Koza, who is also in the Personal Committee on Education. Mr. Mashalela, the Reporting Committee, is also running late, stuck in traffic. Is going to join us during the proceedings, and also an apology from the Deputy Minister of Pretoria. As you are honourable members, can you kindly introduce yourself? Thank you, honourable members. Can we then get the report from the CCOG?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start first. I'm sorry, I apologize. When I introduced myself, I said I only brought the parliamentary officer and the chief of staff. I was not aware that behind me I've got two headweight DGs, the CFO and DGs for the military services, but if you introduce the report, I'm sorry for that slip up. Chairperson and honorable members, I just thought I need to give a small introduction before the commissioner makes the main presentation. We are dealing here with a very weighty matter which affects the most vulnerable group of people, the mine workers. And I must state upfront that this institution, which was supposed to compensate mine workers for what they experienced in the course of their work, has gone through extremely turbulent times, and very soon will be resorting to you as members of parliament to make serious changes, even in the act that governs this part, because that's where part of the problem is. But that's fast coming to your affairs, because we are making preparations for that. It was realized as far back as 2009 that the compensation system of the country is not going well. It's too fragmented. and a decision was taken that this compensation commissioner for occupational disease should be migrated to labor. I'm sure you are aware that we've got many compensations. This one CCOD compensates only, even me, every day they teach me, they confuse me, so I must be very careful. It compensates only only people whose heart and lungs have been damaged, who are working in the mine and work, meaning quarries and all that. Yes, only those. Any other type of injury or disease or damage, it does not compensate them. That is, it's under a law called ONWA. Yes, it's also confusing. You see how difficult it is. Even the commission itself. It's a law called ODMO, Occupational Diseases in Mines and Works Act. Then there's another law called COIDA, Compensation of Occupational Injuries and Diseases. That means any other injury, even if it occurs in the mine itself, and any other disease outside the mine is COIDA. So you can see the sort of confusion. So the cabinet then took a decision as far back as 1998. At that time, the minister was minister member in Zimbabwe, that this must migrate. This compensation commissioner must migrate to the Department of Labor. The minister then was completely unhappy because he found that the CCOD under the law called Portman was in very bad shape, and he was very reluctant at Labor. He said, "We can't take this type of structure from hell. In this state must be brought to good health and be migrated to labor." Very unfortunately, Chairperson, I must say that that's where some of the biggest problems started. Because then it was left in labor never to be held as I learned there, considered on its way to labor. And it was left in the game. In 2009, when we realized this big problem, we also discovered the Compensation Commissioner controls huge amounts of money. At that time in 2009, when I came in, it was about a billion. But the most senior official there was the Deputy Director. Not the Deputy Director General, the Deputy Director, not even a director. To take care of billions, it was not going to work. We then looked for a very senior person, a CA. Because that the biggest problems was issues of financial control. Then we appointed a CA to try and make sense of what's happening there. Unfortunately, it didn't work. It just didn't work. We also have to send the CA away because the situation became worse rather than improving. Until in 2012, we brought in Dr. Derek Kisnafami. As you know, one of the biggest problems about occupational disease in the country is that there are only 40 specialists in the whole of South Africa, in both public and private. There's a total of 40 specialists who are specialized in occupational diseases, and Dr. Mary Hitler is one of them. And as you'll understand, we specialists in every area of medicine, 8% of them will always be in the private sector. So we suffered a similar thing here. We then got Dr. Mary Hitler temporarily to try and make sense, and eventually he's appointed permanently. Now he's going to present what has happened before, I mean since he came in. But one of the things we also did, we brought all the unions, even the unions were not playing ball in this game. In other words, in fighting for their members, we brought them together to show them that we've got to work with all the unions. There are five of them, it's NUM, it's AMCU, it's NUMSA, it's Solidarity and we told them it's in the interest of their workers to get deeply involved in this matter of compensation and the legislation and all that. And they eventually agreed. So Dr. Kisnafami has been working with them. Something which I believe should have happened long ago, unfortunately, it not happened then, but it's happening. And because of that cooperation, even with ex-mine workers, because of that cooperation, we had to go back and found that there were quite a number of files of my worker that has never been even been examined for a very long period of time. I'm sure you'll explain. So we started working with the union. We went through 200,000 files of ex-mine workers. Some of them come from Europe, others from the whole continent, some here in South Africa. We went through those 200,000 files. And we went through them with the coup. And we discovered that out of the 200,000 files, 105,000 deserves compensation for various land ailments. As I told you, the compensation commissioner is only for heart and lung only. For various heart and lung ailments, we found that 105,000 qualify. And 56% of those is one disease, which, you know, I told you about, TB. That's why I came to Parliament about this problem of TB. Then we launched a campaign in Calgary with the five unions in attendance, they all gave speeches to start this compensation mechanism. And that was in focus last year. The biggest problem we are having is to find the people. We have got their files, they qualify, but we need to find the person physically. And it's a mammoth of a task. Dr. Kisnata will explain about that. So not all the 105 people have been seen since August. For the same reason that we can't find them, we are looking all over and we are asking for help. Who is this person? As you are, you understand the history of mine workers in South Africa, how they used to be recruited. So the 105,000, the money is there, but we are looking for people. And on the day we compensated 25, it was symbolic, where we gave them checks. And for the others, we will come rushing in when they see. That's symbolism, but that did not necessarily happen that way. In other ways, it is not necessarily right. We have got to move actively to look for them. At the moment, the team is now busy with 500,000 files. They are now looking into them. That's one of the things we have done. The other thing we did, I'm just mentioning the key issues. You mentioned all the corners. The other thing we did was to establish one stop center to serve the mine workers. And we looked at the mostly the labor in these areas. We have got one stop shop in Tad, in the Eastern Cape, because it was a big labor in this area. The one stop center are performing three functions. Firstly, assess the worker, because you understand that one of the biggest problems which mine workers get, especially in gold mines, you see, because it can occur 20 years after you have left the mine, when you are no longer even there. So we they have to be assessed in that one-stop center. We have got all the instruments, respiratory instruments to assess. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, if the assessment shows that they've got a disease, they need rehabilitation. So that center is also helping to rehabilitate them. The third function, can you help them to get compensation? We discovered that many a mine worker, their biggest problem is just to get information about themselves. They don't have it. In other words, where did I work, from which year to what year? You'll understand our history, why that is so. So that center is supposed to help them together, that history, put it together, so that then they can qualify for compensation. Because even those who qualify for compensation, if they've got, they don't have history of what happened to them, the simple demographic data, they can't. That's why you might have picked up that I picked up a file with Teva, a file with the mining companies about Teva. Because the organization that used to recruit them, as you know, from the ABC, Teva, the Employment Bureau of Africa, now, the mining houses who were using Teva to recruit mine workers, privatized it became a private company, and it has got this information. And we had a battle with them for quite a long time that we demand the release of that information because it belongs to the mine workers. And it looks like, I'm sure Dr. Berish Masam will explain a bit where it is. I was even threatening to go to the Constitutional Court that this is a constitutional matter. For somebody to recruit me from a rural village when I don't know how to read and write to come and work for him, he gets all my information, and then when I need it, I must pay. Because TEBA was, they were telling us it's a private company, anybody who needs information from him must pay. So we're fighting that battle, and if needs be, it will become a constitutional matter. But it looks like they relented, and I'm sure they must be giving the information now. The second one-stop center we opened in Kaltenville, you'll understand Kaltenville is a center of mining, labor in this area. The third one, we are planning to open it in Kuruman, in the Northern Cape. You remember the story of asbestosis there. And the fourth one, we are planning to open it in Vegasford. You'll also remember around the area called Tench, not far from Vegasford. The issue of asbestosis there, how many people, the matter was went to the court in London, etc. But our interest is that we are interested in finding the people and help them in rehabilitation. So that process is on. The two centers are working. We are planning the two others. The last issue, which I want to touch, these compensation mechanisms in the country cannot be left as they are. We need to change the law, the act, which was passed by Parliament. We think there was something structurally wrong with the way in which they were done. One of the first things that is wrong is compensation under CCOD is not equal to compensation under COIP. In other words, the Compensation Commissioner for Occupational Disease under a law called ODMO, which compensates lung and heart for mine workers only, is giving lesser money, much, much lesser money than Compensation Commissioner under COIDA, which is in the Department of Labor, which is for injuries in the mine and any other disease outside the mine. And we believe that is unfair because these are all workers. Our work, our fight, is to make sure that all workers are compensated under COIDA. A series of workshops have already been held on this issue with various stakeholders, mine workers, their unions. The matter is conducted by the Deputy Minister, who unfortunately apologized to him. Together, it's led by the Deputy Minister of the Mineral Resources, Minister Olifant, working with Deputy Minister of Health, Dr. Joe Parker, and Deputy Minister of Labor, Nkosi Kolomisa. The three of them have conducted a series of workshops with stakeholders about coming up with one compensation for all the workers in the country, and that's the plan that will eventually come to Parliament to change the law into one law. So maybe let me, I just thought it's important to understand that. No, the other important thing which I must touch up with another time, because of the problems I've mentioned, the finances of these institutions went pretty well. As you know, the Auditor General even refused to audit the books for a period of 3 years. I don't blame the Auditor General. You can't audit books that don't make sense. Nothing was taken then in this CCOD. Now it took a long time for Dr. Barry Kisnathani and the team to try and make sense of all the documents, the files, and all that, so that the issue of the Auditor General being agreeing to start auditing the books of this thing can come into being. I've been writing letters to the speaker almost every year to apologize, and it was becoming embarrassing. But unfortunately, that is what we are dealing with. And we believe we are now in a position where things can start normalizing. Let me give to Dr. Benny to answer this.
Sir, the overview, Shepard,
committee, for example, like the Hood Committee, meant to say which must be controlled by, did not function from 1998 to 2013. Minister brought me on board in 2012 to be one of the Hood Committee. This determines the risk of mine work. And I need to advise the commissioner and the minister about which mine should be controlled or not. And this committee has never functioned for like 15 years or so. So these are some of the governance issues that we want to
do. What is meant here, Chairperson? I think it's the key you need to understand. The compensation for mine workers is not money from the shifters. It's money which must be paid for by the mining companies themselves. It's not money that you procure through parallel to the shifters. The mining houses themselves must pay that money. In order to pay them, only what is called controlled mines pay, which means there are mines which we don't know about, especially the smaller ones. The controlled mines are helping for 2.6 years, about 246 mines. But for each mine to pay, there must be a risk committee of inspectors, which comes from the Department of Mineral Resources, not from health, which must go to each and every mine, measure the risk, and say because of this high level of risk, you are liable to pay this much, and then go to the next mine. Now, if such a committee doesn't work, it means the mining houses should not pay the compensation. And when we confronted them, they demand, when we confront them as health, because the mine must now come to health or the commissioner, if I may say, through health, to start paying. If there is no inspection, then there is no mine. When we confront the mine works as mining companies, please pay up. They say, show us the risk, show us how much you must pay. And then we become hopeless because the inspector has not gone there. So he's talking about making such a committee to start waiting. If it could not work for that period of time, it means very little money was coming in for compensation. So the fact that we're able to start compensating 105,000 people is because we have now insisted about that committee waiting and the inspectors going and the money coming in. The total amount of money we had when we went for that compensation was 1.5 billion rand, which has been collected from the mining houses.
The resupply services related to the one-stop service centers that the minister spoke briefly to, and I'll speak more about that later on. Change administration was an issue around the backlog, and I'm going to talk to that. This was what we inherited in terms of manual record systems, 200,000 files in the compensation fund, and 500,000 files in the vehicle bureau. And I'll talk to you in a little while, but the Sasha Mishami did some of the work now in assessing these 500,000 files that the minister spoke to. So the change administration and the payment process. Collecting revenue, minister was quite the only issue around the 2.6 control mine. We did not have inspectors. This was a query from the Auditor General's report of 2010-11. How did we know that the mines were actually paying the money that they were due to pay? So we did not have inspectors. We only got these three financial inspectors in 2012-13 financial year, 13-14, and we have nine health inspectors because of the assistance funded by the global fund from the 2014-15 financial year. So we've been improving our inspection capacity, notwithstanding the inspections that ought to be done by the Department of Mineral Resources. By the way, the RIM committee is chaired by the chief inspector of the Department of Mineral Resources. So it's actually, that was part of the problem about two departments having to manage the inspection. So revenue collection, outreach and awareness activities, we discovered that the mine workers, as the minister pointed out, were not aware of their rights about the fact that they need to go for medical examination. And we're not only dealing, we're dealing with 1.2 million ex-mine workers in the region, not just in Amdumkulu, labor sending areas within South Africa, but also Lesotho, Mozambique, Swaziland. The minister also talks about Europe, Poland, etc. We discovered that they were working
on Spain, Greece, they are all on that region.
The 105,000 that is the compensation. I've seen people from Holland, Slovakia, Greece, Spain, who were extra waiting in the mines.
So, outreach and awareness activities, and a lot of the activities are undertaken both by our minister, including a lot of work with the deputy minister, and the portfolio committees have attended some of these meetings I've told you in some of the areas. And then the financial sustainability links to the issue around the actuarial valuation of the fund. The last actuarial valuation of the fund was carried out in the 2010-11 financial year. That was disclaimed, it was not accepted by the advisory committee, which is made up of Chamber of Mines representatives and trade union representatives. The actuarial valuation is very important because that determines the future liabilities of the fund. Because the records were so bad that they could not find 70% of the records when the valuators came at that stage. That was one of the reasons why audited financial statements were then also displayed in terms of, and it was very bad, the data was just not there. And we've been busy, and I'll talk through this process now about where we are with the financial statements and the actual valuation. So these were some of the things that we looked at last year, and then I think we're going to look at the performance environment. So firstly, Minister alluded to the five trade unions, but Minister has also been very active in working with the Chamber of Mines, and particularly the gold mining companies. Minister has had two formal meetings with the chief executives of the major gold mining companies and the Chamber of Mines. He's had three meetings with the Chamber of Mines from his previous term of office when he left them. So there's been 30 major work taking place where we've got now alignment. Up to 2 years ago, there was 30 major non-alignment between the Department of Health, the Chamber of Mines, and the trade unions. We now have alignment where all three parties are geared towards saying, let's solve this crisis for the ex-mine workers or workers in mining work. The governance committees are in place and functioning. I talked about the risk committee, audit committee, audit risk committee, etc. The certification committee, this is a major step. Unlike an injury, which is immediate, if I slip and fall, I break my leg, I can immediately look at the consequences of the slip and fall. As Minister pointed out, these diseases take 10 to 20 years to develop. So if we don't have medical doctors, like the form of Dr. Mishali, who leads a team now of 21 doctors, 19 that have been seconded, as Minister appointed in December of 2014, they have now begun to start functioning in December of 2015, the certification committee. We need to assess the chest x-ray, the lung function, and Dr. Mishali leads the team. So that committee is functioning, and I'll show you some of the work that's come out of their committee. Minister alluded to the integration of the compensation system. We've got these two acts, which is very problematic. Minister has now gone back to the original cabinet resolution of the early 2000s, which says look at the integration, and we are working actively towards that process, and I'll see the pursuit of that. Very interestingly, the Global Fund for AIDS, TB, and malaria has given money to set up one-stop services. They like the concept. So they've just given us, overall, it's a $30 million grant for TB in mining in 10 Southern Africa countries. Minister here, and the Minister must be congratulated. I think he got an award a month ago in Washington, Minister, USAID, on TV, for his work on TV and the top TV partnership. But the Global Fund has given us $30 million for TV in 10, in mining in 10 countries, and about $5 million of that is going to go to set up one top service center in every country. The Global Fund tells that for South Africa, as a middle income country, it wants to set up its own one stop services in South Africa, but for the neighboring countries, they will support that. And they are putting up 12, including two each in the immediate neighboring countries like Mozambique, Sudan, etc. So these are things that Minister has been very supportive of, and in terms of mobilizing resources as we go forward. Now, the financial report and actuarial evaluation, I'm going to talk a bit more towards that. So we kicked off that process with funding from the Chamber of Mines and the Gold Mining Group. We have a very senior finance team with about 40 chartered accountants that have come on board, and I will be talking more towards that later on in about a few minutes' time, and the actuarial evaluation. We process flow mapped the entire operations of the Medical Bureau and the compensation fund, because we want to know where are the log jams. Why is this backlog in non-payment? Why is there a backlog in non-certification? Where are the problems? So we process flow this. The awareness I talked about, very important. We've been, through our minister, actively involved in the presidency program on revitalization of mining communities. I'm not sure our portfolio committee members know. There's a very major program to revitalize 32 mining communities. 19 of them active mining communities, and the others are in the labor sending areas like Eastern Cape, where the presidency is quite involved. Minister and myself have been attending meetings under Minister Jeff Adair that's moving this forward. And through that process, other departments have now got involved with us, like social development, like the tracking and tracing program, to actively involve themselves in helping us to find ex-mine workers, because this will do a lot for poverty alleviation if we can sort out the cash transfers to compensation. So the Department of Trade Industry, Department of Social Development have all been now actively involved with us, including mineral resources, etc., through the process of the presidency. Just to let members know, there's a major class action lawsuit underway right now against the mining companies in general, but there was a partial settlement by two mining companies for 500 million rand about a month ago, 2 weeks ago, Anglo-Gold Ashanti and Anglo-American. That's a separate class action lawsuit for approximately 4,000 mine workers for silicosis. There's a parallel process that we are waiting the High Court to make a ruling on in terms of the other mining companies in terms of this process. And that's very significant in terms of an industry, and that's why I think alignment is coming very well in terms of the work that we are doing in terms of this process. So these are some of the policies that we've been active with, Chairperson. We discovered when Minister talked about operations, governance. These were some of the policies that the Auditor General has found were not present. So we prepared all of these policies. They have been sent to the Director General. Just to point out that the Director General is the accounting officer for the department. In the true sense of the word, I'm the accounting officer for the fund, but I don't have delegation. So I only look after a very narrow part, because the fund is a taking account of the department out. So many of these things have to be signed off by the DG. So these are policies that we've worked through, and we've submitted it to the DG, and we're working through the process of the sign-off by the DG. So these are the performance data for last year coming on board, and then I'll get into the new year. So you can see for my work as extending these medical examinations, that we've gone above target by about 46% through the decentralized facilities by increasing access of mine workers to these activities. Payment processing, that's the certification committee that Dr. Machari has. We have some labor unrest in the MBOD-CCOD. We have some pushback. The minister is well aware of some of the dynamics that are facing at the salary. And unfortunately, then there was some withdrawal of work because they asked that all outsourced workers be taken off the campus, etc. And many of the
commissioner, because this is always confusing, especially to members of parliament, the relationship or the difference between the commissioner and medical bureau for occupational diseases, because a commissioner falls under the Department of Health, but the medical bureau of occupational disease is a direct directory in the department. Can you just mention the difference of the relationship?
So the important part of the process is the compensation fund of 3.5 billion rand, which I'll talk to later on in the financial, is the fund that we have that pays the income protection to mine workers who need to be compensated. So that's the compensation fund. And that's what I run together with the Deputy Commissioner. We then have the Compensation Commissioner for Occupational Disease and the Medical Bureau. They're part of the same act, or JMO, that the Minister talked about. The Medical Bureau is headed by a medical director. And we've had lots of changes of the medical director. We're in the process of recruiting a new medical director because of civil service rules. The salaries are very low, so as Minister pointed out, there are very few occupational medicine doctors. So at the moment, Dr. Machari has come on board. The Minister has made some rule changes for the certification committee to start functioning. And Dr. Machari has been seconded from the industry to help us to take it forward together with 19 doctors. Now, the Medical Bureau for Occupational Diseases is meant to process the application. So when people go to a one-stop service facility to get their chest X-ray done, their lung function assessed, the medical examination done, documents are then prepared at that stage and sent from Amkhasa or Carltonville or from a medical practitioner in the territory. Minister alluded to new one-stop services coming up at Bangkok. It is then sent, the X-rays and the clinical files is then sent to the Medical Bureau for Occupational Diseases. That way you have a team of medical doctors that sit and assess the medical files. Now, there currently is a backlog of around 500,000 files that we are assessing, but in the most recent issues, we have 8,000 files that have come in over the last 1.5 years that the team is actively assessing right now as the Medical Bureau. So, Minister has pointed out a very important issue. The funding for the administration of the Compensation Fund and the Medical Bureau is funded by the votes. So, it comes through with a branch within the Department of Health. Under the branch health regulations and compliance management, under DDG Anton Phillips, and that's where we function in terms of this. Therefore, many of the policies and procedures that we have to do have to be signed off by the Director General. So, we are civil servants in the true sense of the word, although the compensation fund is a trading account in terms of the preparation of activities. And we've had difficulties in terms of recruitment of staff, recruitment of medical doctors, many of the specialists won't come in as a salary. That we offer in the public service, etc. These are some of the difficulties that we've been having in terms of that. But that's the two processes within the same act, but the funding of the administration, the medical bureau, the certification committees, the medical assessments that have to be conducted are paid for by the system, not by the compensation fund. But we'll talk a bit more about that. Minister, hopefully that will be clear. So the payment application process was 7295. The background was that there were resignations of the director of the medical bureau and also the certification committee was not functioning optimally. With the minister appointing the 19 doctors in December 2015, We began now some active processes and managed to do some catch up for in terms of that process. Safe state was a major issue. This was some of the problems that we had, and I'll talk later on about why we are not paying enough claims because of missing documents. Minister alluded temporarily to the issue around Sheva, which is a concept called record of seven. Many of these water developing this is 10 to 20 years later. So they've long left the industry. So the only place we could pick up a record of service that they worked in a controlled mine was Sheva. But we managed to overcome that minister and I'll talk to that later on. But these have been some of the issues in terms of that process. Then in terms of the controlled mine inspectors, so these are the inspections that we carried out in order to assess that they are paying the dues that they are paying for us. And we've only got 3 financial inspectors and 9 other inspectors, and they managed to start beginning to keep up their process out of the 246 mines. The outreach activities have been substantial, so we've done a lot of awareness raising. And then the big issue around TV mining, Treasury asked us to particularly track TV mining because Minister has been quite concerned about TV mining and these are issues that we're picking up in terms of. So this is past performance. These are the problems for the non-performance. Firstly, the legacy issues going back is going back lots of times. Minister alluded to the problem about not keeping the eye on the ball in terms of many years, in terms of the issue around integration, etc. We have very outdated information technology system. We inherited very large manual system. I have a slide of our files, not in any order. We now have a proper entry system so that when the auditor general comes, we can actually, and the actuarial evaluator comes, we can actually pick up files, get back to source documents, etc. We don't have a lot of professional staff. I have given the staff outline in the framework. Many of our staff are sitting at general administration levels and general administrative clerk levels. Minister talked about 2009, when you had a deputy director running a fund of 1 billion rand at that stage. The fund is now 2.5 billion. So these are some of the issues. And then the issues around financial management, we have 61 million rand from the department to run this entire administration, including provision of decentralized services in neighboring countries as well as South Africa. And the fund only covers income protection. So that's a major other difference between us and FIDA. Whereas the FIDA levy covers also administration and provision of medical services, our fund only covers income protection. So the voted funds are for administration and medical services. We're doing a lot of change management issues with the support of the Chamber of Mines. Dr. Anwar Kale has been quite actively involved in that to do issues around change management, working on the culture. So this is some of the work that we've done over the last year. That Minister alluded to about the 200,000 files. So we currently have about 204,000 files. So this, I'm sorry about the slide that we have done, but so that's the issue on paid versus unpaid in terms of the numbers. So we have approximately 100,000 paid, and Minister alluded to the fact that 104,000, 105,000 are unpaid. And you can see the bulk of the paid and unpaid is TV related. So the blue or the purple on the slide is showing the TV claim. The orange is showing the what are called disability, that's silicosis, poor workers, hemophobiosis, asbestos, etc. So that's the orange. And the gray is actually non-classified. So those are some of the problems we've had about an administrative system where supervision was not intact, and you actually, some of it is unknown in terms of the disease. So that's the paid versus unpaid. This is in the compensation fund. This is the age analysis of paid claims. So if you look, production-wise, the two big bars are before 1990 is, we paid a large number, and before 2000. But if you look year by year, from 2000, 2001 onwards, there's been very little payment. We've been processing approximately between 2,000 to 3,000 claims a year. And generally, productivity has declined. Minister brought me on board in 2012 on a part-time basis, full-time as of 2015, and we'll show you some trends as you look at this slide. So in terms of payment, Minister just alluded to this. The Act up to 1993 covers white workers only. So there are some dynamics around the fact that from 1912, the Act that I currently administer used to be called the Mining Title Act. From 1912 to 1993, on the eve of democracy, it then got de-racialized. So that's another history, Minister, but we won't go into that today.
No. The reason that I think that's important, if you look at 1993, there were a lot of people working, because it was a small group of white who were very easy to take and control, they could address the everything. So compensation was very easy. But after 1993, the Act changed to be non-racial, to cover every single migrant. That's when all hell broke loose in terms of compensation.
those wives who used to work in the mine at that time, who were very few. So we've been looking at the data, so unfortunately we haven't taken the discrete numbers, but it does give you the trend that generally production is very weak in certain rainfall. So this is the certification by the medical bureau. You can see that our height of certification was around 2009, but then a gradual decline, and as we now meet up with 21 doctors under the leadership of Dr. Kusnavi, in 2016, these are, by the way, the years referring to government calendar years, March, April to, so it is 2015, 2016 financial year, 2015, 2014, 2015, etc., etc. So we begin to turn around in terms of the certification. This was the slide that the minister talked about on countries, so country of claimants. So you can see in the total at the bottom, the 103,000 not paid, the 96,000 paid, and you can see in terms of countries, 36,000 are in South Africa were not paid, 11,000 in Lesotho, etc. So overall, 37% of the claimants come from South Africa, 13% from Lesotho. We do have problems, but no country of origin on file. So these are the things that we are cleaning up with our electronic database that we can forward, modulate, etc. And these are the amounts that we paid out over the last number of years when the compensation fund was functioning in terms of the process, in terms of transfers. In terms of disease, Minister talked about 54%. Silicosis makes up, silicosis, tuberculosis, adverse-related disease, but TB makes up 54% of the claims overall. But you can see in terms of payments, the bulk of the claims, after 564 million, where we paid out, is 41%, because we pay out on average around 48,000 for silicosis for grade 1, where you have lung function compromises, and 40%. About 40% is called grade 2 diseases, and we pay out on average around 90,000 rand. So you can say silicosis takes up a lot of it, and that's been part of the issues around the losses. TB, we pay very small amounts for loss of earnings for TB. So although TB makes up 54% of our claims profile, but we pay on average 300 rand, 500 rand, 1,500 rand, etc. So that's why in terms of the numbers, although large numbers of TB, but we pay out very little in terms of loss of earnings.
This is really one of the most painful things when one looks into this issue. As I told you, TB is a very big problem now, especially coming from the gold mine. We are also paying a big price as a nation on that issue. Now, for it to be compensated like this, it's one major reason why this compensation commissioner must, this whole thing must be brought to an end and go to Croatia. Because you can't have a disease that's the one that affects most of mine workers. It's so little. Even though most of the people who have got TB are especially, exposed to it by silicosis itself. But the fact that in the compensation, in the act itself, TB is being so little was a terrible mistake that we committed as a nation, which we need to correct very urgently. And that's why I'm saying one main reason why we need to transfer this whole compensation into Croatia and not into if you would be.
There's some gender dynamics. Just point out that more women are coming into the sector now. We have to keep an eye on it, but it's just showing you the changes that were made in terms of male females in terms of mining in the mining industry. So the bulk is two men in the mining industry. Now the reason why we've not paid. So apart from operational problems of just general problems of management, governance, registries, etc., this was very telling. When we did what the minister of the fine comb, we specifically looked into each of the 200,000 files, and we discovered that in 75% of the cases of the unpaid claims, identification documents were missing. 1 in 3 of the claimants are non-South African, ordinary citizens, etc. So they come with passport numbers, passport details. So we didn't have ID numbers and passports. In 94% of the cases, we can only pay into a bank account. We physically don't deal with cash. So you have to have a bank account. 94% in a bank account. There's a record of service, 61%, that the minister alluded to care about. So we didn't have a record of service, which control minor works that they work in. Unfortunately, Minister, we've not concluded yet the details with care about, but we've worked around it by working closely. Because of your meetings with the chief executives of the mining companies have recorded that they have now facilitated to actually get. So instead of the individual still have to pay 90 rand, I'm told, to Sheva, if they want to get a record of service. But by working with the mining companies, we are overcoming that in terms of the mining company
some amelioration and working together with Sebas trying to resolve this, but he did not get fully resolved. So that's the sort of point of Sebas. And then address, where are the mine workers from? Because of the labor, migrant labor system and affecting African workers in particular, it's been very difficult to calculate. Remember that in 10 to 20 years after the individual has left the service, he did not provide the benefit medical examinations every 2 years, he did not provide the services. So now you go back and find people as in a major issue. Dr. Gil Kutus is leading a major team on tracking and tracing, and depending on time, Chairperson, we might spend a bit more time on tracking and tracing, and also involving parliamentarians, probably through constituency work, to help us to actually reach people. So this is some of the issues. Here's the personal distribution for the compensation fund, approximately 50 posts. Overall, we have about 120 posts. The rest of the posts are in the medical bureau, but because of the compensation fund presentation to you, we're only talking about the posts within the compensation fund. 43 are firm, and we have some seconded personnel, etc. And this is the distribution in terms of the personal profile of the group. So let's get to the meat of the matter, going forward. So what are we concentrating this year in terms of going forward on the new annual performance plan? So firstly, Minister, the policy decisions are explained. To change the policy and legislative framework, Minister talked about the fact that the Deputy Minister of Mineral Resources, Deputy Minister Oliphant is leading the integration process supported by the two Deputy Minister of Health and Deputy Minister of Labour. We have gone into fairly detailed discussion with the industry about creating a legacy fund. Remember, our current figure is around 3.5 billion. We think that if we have these ex-mine workers finally coming through for the compensation, we're going to need a substantial cash injection. Almost similar to the settlement that's being made of a legacy fund that has to cover these mine workers as we begin to find them, face them, track them, and certify them. Then we talk about the development of the care fund. So the legacy fund is for income protection. The care fund is for the cost of medical expenses, etc. Now that we have data from the one-stop services, it costs us on average the capital cost of setting up a one-stop service is around 7 million rand. That is the building, the X-ray equipment, the lung function test, etc. It's about 7 million rand. And the recurrent cost is about 4 million rand per annum. The cost of the medical doctors, the technicians for the lung function, the nurses, the diagnostics. So that's why we could get the costings for the global fund, Minister, for example, neighboring countries. So these are the issues that we feel that why should the fiscus carry the cost of medical examination? So what had happened was in this fund, the cost of medical examinations for ex-mine workers became the burden of the system, Minister Montalegre. But in the Department of Labour, the levy covers the cost of their time. So we've asked, talking with the industry, which has been very positive, is that we're looking at the legacy fund and the care fund. Of course, we are discussing these issues in the context of the actual evaluations being done of the fund. The second issue is on governance. We continue with improving the governance. You know, there are different committees that need to function. Then the benefits. Minister talked about the new one-stop facilities, begging for it so much. Unfortunately, because of fiscal constraints, we will not continue because there's not been enough funds to set this up. The Minister and the Director General found development partner funds from the European Union to help to set up the capital costs of begging for it so much, and we are talking to the industry about the recurrent costs. For example, the partnership in Carpenter, government provided, the industry provided the funding for the capital, from the capital costs and the recurrent costs. Tata facility is provided wholly within the Department of Health funding infrastructure. So these are the structures in terms of the partnerships that we do. We are looking at mobile facilities. The fixed facilities as a wheel and a hub method. So we are talking to Auron Institute, which is also funded through the Global Fund, which is doing some major work in TV in very mining communities, about how do we use the mobile facilities to also reach mine workers in very mining areas, etc. I talked about the certification committee. Very important, we discovered that the health professionals in the industry and in the private sector are trained in recognition of occupational diseases in general and mining diseases in particular, like coal workers, pneumoconios, etc. So Dr. Tashami is busy with the National Institute for Occupational Health to try and improve on training of health professionals in diagnostic capabilities, because they are the contact staff that pick it up. We're also looking at working with nurses, particularly at primary health level, to the diagnosis of primary health care. So the electronic database is a fairly major innovative forward. We're dealing with 200,000 compensation files manual and 500,000 MDOD files. We now have, in the final stages, funded by the mining industry, a major electronic base. I'm not going to be able to demonstrate it today, but probably when we come to present our results, quarterly or when the portfolio committee comes, we'll bring in the team that shows you. We've now, all the files are now scanned
onto an electronic database. The approach we are now taking is that when you're in Asana, you pull out the file on your screen. So the mind worker will know when he comes in front of you to say whether he's due for access to his fund, etc. Dr. Bin Kutis is then working across the industry with the same of mind. So the mind workers are not just entitled to funds from our fund. There's also mind workers who have funds in the Provident Fund, Pension Fund, etc., etc. So the mind workers, there's between 5 and 10 million rand that's locked into just for this group of workers in social protection funds that needs to be unlocked. So from the work we are doing on our electronic database, it will be used as a benchmark now. So Dr. Kutis might talk to that later on in terms of the process. So the IT system, one of the issues we had was we didn't have good financial management system. So the Deputy Commissioner will talk through the issues around the Fiscal Evolution. We just put in a financial management and reporting system and we stopped that with support from the Chief Finance Officer, etc. I'm Jay Clay, Minister talking about Project Kuria, and this is the work that we're doing with support from the World Bank. Everybody is involved as well. IT Capital is the outsourced company funded by the Chamber of Mines that's dealing with stressing and facing. And we hope to involve portfolio company members if we can work with you in the constituency to also assist us with the tracking and trading. Fast track process from the one-stop services and then the links to the bank, etc. Dr. Buddhist has been very active in talking to the banking council of South Africa. And we've also been talking to the Department of Social Services Agency. So by linking up our electronic database, Minister Chairperson, with Tampa, the 100,000, we've discovered 20,000 claims. People are active on the Tampa database. Talking to one major bank, we've discovered 11,000 of our payments are on their database. So we need to share information so we'll be able to start these fast tracks in terms of this work. And I talked about the process program. Collection of revenue, we've improved considerably. Deputy Commissioner will talk to that. The actuarial valuation report. So the actuarial valuators were appointed in November last year, started working in December. So we are busy with the actuarial valuation of the fund now that our report system is in place. And they will provide their third actuarial report in June 2015, which will then go to retake the 2010-11 financial year, because that was the last year that we have some statements, and we'll talk through that in I've got two slides on the financial statements coming up. Personal management and systems, some major work to try and deal with some of those issues, and the financial statements. Now, Shepard, the last time you presented annual reports and financial statements to this commission and parliament was 2009-10. The 10-11 finances were withdrawn because it was incorrect in terms of the actual valuation. The actual valuation is important because the Act makes it clear for the one. If there's a shortfall in the financial liabilities of the fund, then the minister has to go to Treasury and ask Treasury for additional money. And we felt if the actual valuation was not correct, then there will be problems. Of course, we are talking to the industrial consumption party, so this was very important to do a correct actuarial valuation. So based on that, the audit of this committee had a meeting with the minister in that year, and said, Chief Minister, we should not present this to Parliament and be valued. So what's going to happen? We're going to prepare the financial statements. The process started in October 2015 with a very senior team that is supported by the mining industry, and I'm going to give you now the framework for that. So here's the financial statement. Outstanding for the 2010-11 financial year. The evaluators were appointed in quarter 3 last year. We needed data cleanup, which we are busy with, which will be cleaned up by May 2016. And the first actual report will be in June 2016. That report will then go and restate the finances of 2010-11 and reconsider that process and take quotes. And we are hoping that between the 2010-11 and the 2011-12 financial statements will be presented to the Auditor General, and we've already begun discussion with Auditor General in September this year. So the first set of financial reports and annual reports will be in September 2011-12, in September this year for the 2011 and 2011-12 financial year, incorporating the actual reports and some of the data. And thereafter, 6 monthly, we are hoping to clean up the backlogs in the 12-13 financial year, 13-14 financial year, etc., given that our base is correct. Because the first issue was to sort out the base for the financial reporting, which we didn't have before. The revenue, we reconciled the register. We did not know when we came in, Minister, about how many control mines of work we had because of the non-functioning of the risk committee, etc. So we now have a base of the control mines. We now have gone and done all the assessments. We are going back on reconciling those mines that have not paid us, etc., etc. And also the risk assessment levy. On the expenditure side, the data verification of the 200,000 pirates, paid and not paid, what amounts are outstanding, etc., etc. So we've done that cleanup, and I gave some of the slides with that. The accounting systems I faced in December 2015, we had to prepare an entire cash book from scratch, from base documents. We never had a public cash book in the system. So this was very important for the trial balance, that for those who are of the accounting background, the balance sheet, etc., and put those together. The cash books are now loaded and moving forward. Audit preparation. So the audit team has been appointed by the Auditor General of South Africa in March. They are preparing their audit strategy, and therefore we are confident to reach these targets by September this year, at least for 10-11 and 11-12 financial years, bringing these together. We've already had 5 weekly meetings with the finance team and the audit team. So we've got the external finance team, led by the Deputy Commissioner. The Chief Finance Officer is very actively involved, and also the audit team from the Auditor General's office. So I'm going to run through some of the concluding slides. So this is the 61 million that is the Department of Health budget, which we'll be interrogating this afternoon. So this is just to give you a snapshot that this is what we have that runs the administration of the fund. We need approximately 100 million more. So this is the need. And this external funding. So again, the levy in the Department of Labor, quite high. Covers the cost of administration, the cost of medical services and rehabilitation, and the cost of income protection. In my fund, the compensation fund of 3.25 billion only covers income protection. It doesn't cover the cost of administration, and it doesn't cover the cost of provision of medical services. And this is the additional fund that we need, but we can't get that out of external funding while we work with the processes. But maybe you would encourage ministers to redirect some funds. But it's too late now, your budget statement is already given. So this is the final statement of the compensation fund.
I didn't mean the input here to be a lobbying for more funds, because almost every directory will do that. But it also emphasizes the fact why the mining company, which are responsible, must be made to pay life in coin. We can't do it because the act does not allow us. Like in that the Department of Labor. But in other ways, I don't think it's fair for the fiscal to go and pop up an extra 100 million money for activities that are happening in the industry that is getting so much money. So we would like, again, to expedite that movement so that we go to them and say you must also finance the activities of the commission. So that's going to happen, but not for the fiscal sector. It's time to do now, because
but just to say, we must acknowledge the contribution of the government partners and the mining companies. They've done a lot since Minister met with them in February last year to come to the party and assist to solve. And many of the gains we've made, Chairperson, has actually been because of the internal resources, including the doctors, financial administrators, etc. So this is the final statement of the compensation part. So this is the revenue side. In terms of what we collecting, and you can see we've been beefing up through the financial inspection their revenue amount by increasing. We've also had some changes in the levy, so that's also added to it. This is the expenditure side, where the administration costs here are the payment for the, you know, the bank charges, you know, when we do bank transfers, etc., and the cost of the actual valuation is also costed in this. So that's where, but the bulk of it is linked to the expenditure, including pensioners. By the way, we've got about 100 pensioners on the books. That comes from the fiscal. That's a direct transfer of about 3 million a year. And this is in terms of the old act that covered the white people only in South Africa. So we have about 100 pensioners that are still covered in the fiscal. In terms of assets, so we currently see a total asset around 3.4 billion. We don't play in the money market. These are in bank accounts and liquid. And we're not in any high level investment risk, etc. So we've got cash in bank at 3.5 billion rand approximately. And the fact that we could track and trace 104,000 people, we'll transfer 1.5 billion to them immediately. We've got the money, we must find them and pay them in terms of this policy. These are some of the liabilities, but this is still subject to the actual valuation data. So this is based on the old provision, the Deputy Commissioner from the 2010-11 actual valuation, which was rejected by the advisory committee, rejected by the Auditor General in terms of business payment. So we're waiting the new actual valuation. We've got the proper valuation of our liabilities. Chairperson and Minister and honourable members, thanks for your time. And
I know the ADT experience, the tables were very small, so I do apologize in terms of your 4-6 vision. 6-6 vision is normally good. But this is table 9, which talks to some of the expenditure profiles. And then table 1.4 is our strategic objectives and targets, which I spent much more of a macro view on. Table 4.2 was on the quarterly targets. 4.3 was on the performance targets and the treasury and where we're going forward, and then some technical issues. So I can put them up, blow them up, but again, I apologize that we didn't do the proper format because in the book it would have been very small, and my apologies in terms of your reading into it. Thanks, Chairperson,
thank you very much. That would be the end of the presentation, but I've got just one important issue to mention, because as members of the committee, you are taking care of the whole issues of health, not only compensation, but you will also agree with me that compensation is already when you are damaged. Healthcare is not about that. It's not about waiting for you to be damaged and compensation. So seeing, having noticed from this side, the amount of damage that is being caused in the mind through the problem of TB, we then decided that we are not going to wait until the compensation commissioner compensates. We have got to fight TB in the mine. So one of the things we have done, we have got 500,000 mine workers now, is to screen them quite often for TB so that we can start putting those who need treatment or treatment, or we can have some form of prevention. Now, what we did, because the screening process in South Africa was launched by the Deputy President on World TB Day, 24th of March, last year. Now, this is how it works. We have looked at the districts that are most affected by TB in the general population first. And we found that these districts correspond to mining activities. Number one district in the country is Migwele Botswana, very highly affected by TB, that whole district of Migwele Botswana, in the Free State, around Durban, Virginia. And you will appreciate the link with gold, the dams that are there. The second highly affected district is KK Kaunda, in Northwest. Now, number three is Bujanala, in Northwest also. Number four is Kalchenville, in Western County. Number five is Kepala in Limpopo. And number last is the gas also in Limpopo. We realize that these are related to mining activities. So we've calculated there are about 6 million individuals in there. They must all be screened for TB. The other screening is happening in correctional services. That's why we have won a lot, because we have screened them through and through. We screen them on arrival, we screen them 2 times when they are inside, we screen them when they go outside. There are 150,000 inmates there. Then the third screening must happen in the mine, where there are these 500,000 people. But we took a view that we must again not use safe facilities to do that screening. The mining houses themselves have to do the screening and the treatment. Fortunately, they agreed. What we have done now as a state, we've just hired 9 inspectors. They've got nothing to do with the inspectors that are in the competitive position. These are special inspectors that must make sure that a mine worker is screened for TB. And we've hired 9 of them. And since we have hired them, I'm happy to announce that 90% of the mining houses are now compliant. They are doing screening for TB. And we've encouraged that the people in the 60s, especially, whenever they go to the clinic for anything, for any ailment, or even if they are going just for immunization, etc., if they find themselves within the premises of a clinic or a hospital, they must have to be screened for TB. Screening for TB does not necessarily mean putting people through machines. The first screening is oral. We can ask you 5 oral questions and listen to the answer of how you respond to them. Only then we'll take you over to gene expert, etc., etc. Now, in that regard, we are far advanced. Part of the reason why we got recognition from USAID is because a new technology called Gene Expert, that machine that diagnosed TB, has conducted 4 million tests global last year, and 2 million of those, 50%, were conducted by us in South Africa as a country. So we are responsible for 50% of global tests around the whole world. So that's one other achievement which we're very proud of. The second reason is people who are HIV positive, you are aware, are very much exposed to TB. In fact, if I have to put it this way, if you are HIV positive, the chance of getting TB increases threefold or by 300%. And you know, in the mind, the chance of being positive because of the type of activities that are taking place there is very high. So if you have got TB, the chance of getting, sorry, you have got it. HIV, the chance of getting TB increases by 300%. What do we do with you then? Because we know anytime you can get TB. You are HIV positive, you don't have TB, but you can come anytime. We then put them on what is called IPT, or isoniazid prevention therapy, the drug called isoniazid, which people take to prevent them from getting TB. Now I'm happy to announce that 63% of people who are on isoniazid prevention therapy in the whole world are here in South Africa. In other words, we are responsible for 63% of all that prevention. Now, the other thing I want you to know, when people have got silicosis, their chances of getting TB increases sixfold or by 600%. Now, when you get HIV positive and silicosis, at the same time, your chances then increase 18-fold, or they increase by 1,800%. Now, we need to know all these things. And of course, if you are diabetic, I'm talking about diabetes in this house, I don't know how many are there, but I always see when people are tired in a meeting, they declare diabetes, so that we can go for lunch, sit here and all that. So I don't know how many, but I want to warn, if you are truly diabetic, the chances of getting TB increases fivefold. So they must also be watched out. So for that reason, we have got this cleaning exercise, and I'm happy to announce, when we check the records from clinics, since the launching in March last year, we have got about 30 million records. That means, because every person who is screened, even oral, they let us fill on a file. And we calculated 30 million files which were filled in that way. I'm actually lobbying, as you know, we also set in the legislation that people must screen for TB. Members of parliament must screen. In the mine, we are screening. In those districts, we are screening. In correctional cities, we are screening. If you find you HIV positive and you are very much likely exposed, we put you on IPT, isoniazid prevention therapy. So there's a lot of activity that is going on about this issue of TB. So that 20 years later, we don't end up where this man has landed today, having to go through 200,000 miles and finding that 56% of TB. We are trying to stop that, that it should never happen again in this country. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, the report is public on myself on the change in Congress community. In the
vote. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you to the Honorable Minister, Dr. For that presentation. I just have a few questions, and I'll be brief. But just a comment to begin with. During my training as a registrar, I had the opportunity to go down a mine shaft into a mine. And it was one of the most difficult experiences in community health and community medicine. It was one of the most difficult experiences that I've had. The conditions under which our mine workers work, even though now we have health and safety provisions and standards, was difficult to understand how our fellow countrymen and women have to go through that experience on a daily basis. This is now, I can't even think of what happened in P94 when there weren't those standards and how difficult it must be. And so now we have a situation where we have legitimate compensation claims for people going back into the past And we have administrative injustice issues because some of those individuals from that past experience still, their families haven't received compensation even though they've passed away. And so there are deep issues of social injustice that are involved here. I think it's important for me to have that as an outline of what I'm going to be saying. I think that certainly the efforts of the department and particularly the commissioner have to be recognized. It's a very difficult situation if you would remember, and strides have been made. But there are still areas of deep concern. One of the areas of concern is if you look at slide 7. Now, for me, I struggle with the numbers from slide 7. We're looking at a backlog, we said, of 500,000 files, plus minus. And if you look at slide 7, you'll see that the output is 1,000, 2,000. There is some progress. But if you look at the second row, back to slide 7, if you look at the second row there, the middle row, that's just the tip of the proverbial iceberg. So that just represents new plans, right? But there's underneath that this massive iceberg of hundreds of thousands of files, and we're chipping away 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 at a time. What I would like to know firstly is what is the turnaround time from point of application to completion of application? What is the turnaround time? And then what is the goal turnaround time in order for us to make a significant dent in an iceberg? And what is the difference between those two things? We need to know that because then we have a sense of where we're going and we can begin to project. The second thing is that the Commission spoke about the fact that we have now functional certification committees. Again, this must be applauded. And that we are bringing in different health workers to be part of that process. And that's important, again. The only concern is if you have, say, a medical doctor from company A who's part of this process, and he or she sees a file from a patient from company B, that's fine. There's no conflict of interest. But if that same person sees a patient from company A, you could have a conflict of interest because it can bias the decision. What safeguards have been put into place to ensure that there's in fact transparency in that process is very important. Okay, and then thirdly, if you go to slide 11, this is one of the most also troubling slides here. So we understand that legacy issues contribute to that drop from before 2000 to 2000. That's unconscionable that occurred, but we understand there are legacy issues. My concern is what's happened between 2000 and 2010, 2011. Because that dip especially is utterly unacceptable. And somebody has to be held to account. We have a constitutionally mandated duty to exact oversight of the executive, and here there is a breakdown in administrative function, and somebody has to be held to account. And so what we need in order for us to do our job then is to get the information. So how did this occur? Why, you know, who is responsible for this breakdown in governance? And just before I understand the current condition of time, but we need to identify those involved, and they have to be held to account. And so the specific question then is, so around about that time, why was there such a high turnover on the top management structure in the MVOD? And you know, are there issues that we need to be aware of that will allow us to exercise our oversight function? Then with regards to the one-stop shops, I think this is an applaudable initiative. I think, you know, again, to anything that can accelerate the processing of claims is important. But when we went to Impunta as a committee, you know, we unfortunately, perhaps it was just a snapshot of a day that was quiet because there weren't any miners there coming for compensation. And so what would be great going forward is for each one-stop shop to get a sense of what the performance has been, so we can get a sense of value for money. So, you know, for the one-stop shop, this has been the throughput, and this is where we're hoping to go. I think then the last question I have is, with regards to the legislation, you know, it's a little confusing for us because we see DMR, we see Department of Labor, we see Health. We know that there has to be harmonization of the legislation. Well, you know, what is our role? What is the role of Health? Do we ultimately see the entire compensation system coming to Health? Because then we need to prepare ourselves. Will it actually go under a completely different department? And then what will our role be as legislators in that process? Thank you.
Thank you.
time. Hence, an agreement was that all those mines must be tracked down and made to comply, because you can't have others paying, others not paying for this compensation fund. So it is very important that a concerted effort must be made to make all the mines pay for this compensation. The screening, now that we have a gene extra machine.
Sure, that's my, I missed the point. I didn't answer the question, I'm sorry. The commissioner might have, but I also need to ask
you. We discussed that the mines that are not actually paying these funds, which are not registered, must be found or checked and made to comply with the act, that they must pay the compensation and pay into the funds which is used for compensation. You can't have half the mines paying and the other half not paying. So a concerted effort should be made to make them comply. I hope I'm understood. Thanks. The second question is that now that we have a machine that can actually do a lot of screening, I mean, screening a lot of patients or people per given time, why don't we just put in each mine, actually, a machine to screen all the mining community. That way, we can screen as many as possible within a short space of time, instead of taking our time and screening them gradually until we finish them. Any preventative measure is better than curative measure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation. It's an act of administrative justice. You believe it's really fundamentally important. If anybody has gone down a mine shaft to the stope face, you will realize that the workers work at a very deep level. I mean, I went down at some deep levels, just 2 kilometers down and 1 kilometer across. And it's immensely noisy. And one of the things that happens is that people's hearing gets affected. So hearing loss is quite an important issue, especially among machinists. And the machinists, if you look at the history of this, there was an occupational specialization in the mine, often linked to country of origin and sometimes ethnicity. And Shangaan speakers, Mozambicans, were machine specialists, especially on the East Grand on the mine. So they were severely affected over generations. And those of you who understand the political economy of mining, in the 1970s, most of the workers were foreign workers, Malawians, Mozambicans, Basutus, because you had a fixed price of gold, and the only way you can make the mines profitable is by affecting the wage levels externally, because foreign workers had the least rights, even less rights than black South Africans. And so 70% of the mines, in fact, were populated by the workers who are from outside of South Africa. And so I'm sure that throws up questions of tracing those workers, that's one issue. But the other issue is that the diseases, especially when it comes to machinists and hearing loss, that trace back into Mozambique. That's the one point I wanted to make. The second point is that TEBA is an amalgamation of two recruiting agencies. The NRC, which recruited locally, and Manila has recruited foreign workers. And they were not just a recruiting agency, they were also a bank, which means that they were responsible for, under apartheid, workers didn't have rights, they just repatriated the money back to the rural areas without asking the workers' permission. And the money was paid into your local bank. And it was paid out to workers at a staggered rate so that the interest accumulated were kept by those banks. So the Bank of Lesotho, for example, would receive X amount of money and would pay it out to the families in 2 months after they got it. And they had that cycle. In the case of Mozambique, it was paid in gold. Okay, so that and when Mozambique was a Portuguese colony. And speaking about the legacy fund, I would recommend that the ministers start discussions with Portugal about contributing to that legacy fund. Because, I mean, the Portuguese were the worst in terms of colonial latest plunder, right? And so in this case, the interest that was accumulated was paid out in gold until Mozambique became independent. Let me see, I think those are the two issues I wanted to raise. Thank you.
Honorable Sekonen. Thank you very much, Chair. maybe just to start off by saying that this is a great initiative, considering what the miners in the past have had to go through. I can still remember the Durban thing when I was growing up. People being recruited from villages, because those things, it was difficult for you as an ordinary citizen to go to the urban areas. You had to go through so many processes and you refused to go to the urban areas. But people going to the mines were so easy because they were just used for labor. And it was migrant labor. And I think at the time there was just no consideration whatsoever for health issues or the welfare of the workers. I'm just saying this by way of commenting. And therefore, this initiative, I really think it should be commended. But looking at the number of ex-miners that you have to battle with, to face, I think it's a mammoth task. But it's still commendable as well that you've been able to actually save more than 100,000. And I'm just trying to imagine how how difficult it is to actually change these people, because a lot of these people were not educated, they did not have any rights, they did not even know their rights, and I think one of the challenges we may face is that some of them have died, some of them just don't even read newspapers, even if you try to publicize, but all these are just by way of commenting. But I just wanted to check, maybe it's an unfair question, but just to check the current status, how big is the problem now of in the occupational and all that, in the current situation. But you may be still grappling with trying to make sense of things, but it would be interesting. But at least nowadays, I know that there are some measures taken to provide things like protective clothing, something that was unheard of in the past. In terms of funding as well, I agree with you, Commissioner, that we definitely need additional funding. And in South Africa, there's lots of money in the private sector. And I think it's quite interesting that they are coming on board. And I think they have the capacity to actually assist the process. But the money is there. It's just a matter of people coming on board and needing to access with the serious challenge that is facing the country, because I consider it as something that is very important. The TB screening minister, I think, and I know it's one of your questions, I always see you talking about TB in many instances, and I think TB, as we all know, we should be controlled, but we are really struggling in this country to control it, not just in the mind, but as a country. And I just want to commend you for the screening processes, because they can make a big contribution in terms of prevention and promotion of health. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Shwane, and Mashale, after you.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. And I think we should welcome the report from the CCOD. However, I think given the input that really was made by the minister, that I suppose Dr. Perry came, that time himself, that it was since 2010, 2011, financial year that I have been able to get some sense of interaction with this department. It's quite unfortunate, but I think we need to mention that you know, the problems of the entities of health themselves really should not be limited to the department. I think at any given time, whatever problems they have, it's only important that still they should make sure that they are able to report to Parliament, and whether it's one staff member or two staff members, but regardless of what the problems they are going through, I think we need to be part of those problems. We need to be part of finding solutions to make sure that we cover the department that's required by the job it's supposed to do and the constitution. So I think really, in the spirit of trying to make sure that as we conduct oversight to these entities, that we also have an obligation to work with them on corrective measures. On the issue of the mine workers, I think there's a general consensus that you know, politically, governments, I suppose, all over the world, mine workers are always failed, like it's a matter of fact. Governments politically don't do much for mine workers. The mining houses themselves don't do much for mine workers. And I think with regard to the health aspect, I think we shouldn't blame them. You know, we should try our best to mitigate the conditions of mine workers. They are the last people in the food chain. Socially, in terms of education level, they are the most uneducated people. On the health aspect, we should do a lot to try and mitigate their conditions. I mean, part of the requirements of the Mine Health and Safety Act, I think it was alluded to that current mine workers and ex-mine workers are entitled to benefit the medical examination perfectly, which is a function of the medical bureau of occupational disease. And the reason we are able to trace mine workers is because that department, I mean, that entity itself is unable to do that. Perfectly, you must have the lungs and the heart of mine workers being examined, and that is the way of keeping contact with mine workers. And we wouldn't have the problem of difficulty in tracing them. And I think that is one aspect that really should improve. It should improve because the problem of TB in the mind is the reality that we might not even be able to win. And how do we then prevent the mind TB from spreading into our communities? Because then we must find a way of consistently keeping mind workers. And the other issue is around the fact that, Minister, maybe that you made the fact that, look, the most important aspect is not even the treatment, it's actually the prevention. And together with the communities where the mining activities are taking place, I don't know, but I know in the past, mining houses used to have some sort of a hospital, which was mainly focused on the mining employees themselves. I am worried if we're going to conduct screening of mining communities together with the mine workers. I think we need to try to look at separating the two. The mine workers, the mining communities must be treated differently from the communities in terms of the TB management. Because in the mines, you don't only deal with TB in its form, but you deal with the most complicated form of TB. You deal with the MTR, the XDR, and you want to keep that separation between the communities and the miners. So there must be a sense of commitment to say that how do we ensure that management of TB specifically in the mine always separated from that of the public, so that we don't mix them, we don't spread it to the public, because with mine TB is always there, we never win. So that is another aspect. But I think we need also encourage the mining houses really to really take serious that when they employ miners. We know that migrant labor system is, but the issue of tracing and getting collateral family members of making sure that when you employ a minor, you are able to trace the minor through a family relative or through some form of a collateral, so that at any given and it shouldn't present a challenge really to be able to trace miners. There's a lot of work that I believe this specific department needs to do really to in the mining space with regards to improving really the life of miners. But I think I'm not convinced that the mining houses themselves are coming to the party. I don't want us really to be political around it, but I am not convinced. I don't think the government speaks to customers strange about the mineral economy. There is a lot of capital there. That really, they owners of proof, nice with the business itself, to take care of their employees. They know the type of risks that mining employees are exposed to. It's not a shock, it's not a, it is a reality. They know about it, that this is an environment you come to work 10 years, 15 years later, you are not going to be a useful member of society. You're going to be diseased. You're going to be, you're just not going to be okay. So I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done. But also, we must look at the aspect of the your general compensation of occupational injuries and diseases anywhere else except for in the mines. I think we need to make a lot of commitment around that as well. Thank you very much.
Chairperson,
I'm sorry. I really want to understand the doctor that this separation is talking about of separating mine workers from communities. Can I just understand what the issue is there?
You know, Minister, my worry is that you're coming up with a very good proposal that the mining communities, which is the adjacent communities where the mining operations are taking place, there needs to be intense screening. And my worry is that how the EC should find that the screening will be taking place in the same hospital, which is a community hospital, for example, for an argument's sake. My argument is that we need to find a way to enforce that the screening of mine workers themselves should be done separately from the community screening. For example, you would have medical stations in the mines who would conduct screening. Or you would have a particular mine, for an example, let me take an example you gave in Velcom. There is Oppenheimer, in fact, the former Oppenheimer, I think it's called the Sandelina Private Hospital, which historically was a mining hospital, which then made it easy for the mines, for the adjacent mines to manage their case separately from the community. The community would then use a Bongani hospital. Because my worry is that in the mines, the TB, in most cases, sometimes the immunity is always your MDR and your XDR. So we don't need to mix the community with the mine with us so that we don't get to spread your XDR and your MDR. I don't know if I'm clear, then, sir.
Okay,
I'll
respond to
you.
Honorable
Mr.
Chairman.
Thanks very much. Just quickly, I just want to get I'm trying to get a correlation between slide 19 and slide 17 in relation to, there is an indication, for example, that non-performance, one of the key areas of non-performance is as a result of bullet number 3 in slide number 9, which is lack of various personnel or shortages of staff in the various fields that have been mentioned there. But when we go to the staff complement on slide number 17, let me look at the vacancy rate. It's not in tandem with what you are saying, the cause of non-performance in relation to personnel. You can just clarify that, because there's no correlation between the two. I would have thought that it should correlate to each other. That you are raising non-performance, and one of the areas of non-performance is the staff. It's a lack of staff in this field that is mentioned. Then you go to your staff complement and distribution and vacancies. It doesn't say the same thing. It says something different. You can just clarify that, Chancellor. and how does the two relate to each other? That's the first question. The second question is, just to understand what is the value of us being presented by this ADD. If at the end of the day you are not going to produce annual reports, what becomes the value? I'm raising in the context that since we arrived here, you have been persistent at ADP, but you have never received an annual report. Then what is the value of continuing to present an annual report, I mean an ADP, which you are at the end of the day, you are unable to produce an annual report out of it, which then, because annual reports, when they are presented, we must then measure your performance. And that performance can only be measured through the annual report. And you are unable year in and year out to produce an annual report. Then what becomes the failure of continuing to engage and come and present an annual performance plan if you are unable to produce an annual report? I just want to understand what is the title of that. I'm raising it in the context that in terms of the treasurer guidelines, your annual report must provide the general information, must provide the information of predetermined objectives, you must have the annual financial statement, which you are saying is the main reason why you are unable to do so. And then you must then give the human resource management performance in that annual report. And you are able to submit an annual report because of one element, which is your AFS. And as a result of that, you are therefore unable to track where the extent to which you are able to perform on the other four areas of the annual report, just because of one element of the annual report. And therefore, why then becomes the deal of us engaging you in any of these, because you are unable to produce any of them at the end of the day to the committee or to parliament itself. But the other thing, just want to get an understanding, the annual report that must be table must be informed by the annual performance plan. Which annual performance plan goes with the budget that gets appropriated by parliament? And the amount that you are unable to produce, that is the AF statement, I mean the annual financial statement that you are unable to produce, it's amount that is not voted by parliament. So how do you correlate the two? That you are going to table your report, get adopted by parliament, with a particular amount voted and some amount not voted by parliament. And as a result of the amount that is not voted by parliament, you are able to produce an annual financial statement. And as a result, you are unable to produce the annual report. How do you correlate the two so that you are able to understand what then becomes the value of us engaging in you in this area of work? So that's what I want to raise. And then thirdly, just to get the extent to which the one-stop centers that you have, or service center that you've established, the extent to which the extent to which they are utilized and accessible, especially to people in the rural areas. Raising it in the the context that, as you know, the history of the recruitment by Teva and others were mainly dominantly people in the rural areas. That's when Teva was making most of the recruitment for people in the mines and also people from the neighboring countries. How are these service centers accessible to the people in those rural areas? And taking into consideration the constraints, the budget that you have, how then become it possible to enhance your activities so in the context of outreach, so that people are able to know these services centers, so that then they are able to utilize and you are able to have access to them, taking into consideration the constraint of the resources at your disposal. And then how then to, I'm not sure whether I might have missed it, what plan and strategy are there to make sure that you then engage the also bulk of the people that are in the neighboring countries, your Botswana, your Mozambique, your Swaziland, etc.
Chairperson, may I
understand
the honorable member the last question about how accessible the one-stop center. I just want to clarify on that. He's talking about accessibility to ex-mine workers or communities or what. Can I just get a clarity on that part?
Isn't that the affected people belongs to communities and they have got families and everybody else, so must be accessible to everybody. So that even those that because if I'm a mine worker, I've got a family. So if the accessibility must not just be only if I knew about it, then I was able to access that information. It then becomes easy for me to relate that information to the mine worker who must be the beneficiary there. I don't think it should be just a matter that is limited to those that are affected, because the information must be available to everybody so that you are able to share to those that get affected.
That's it. I think I'm covered by Honorable Matarela's first question regarding the implementation of the APIs when we're not getting the annual report. I think I'm covered. But my second question, is about reaching out to our community. When you look at the statistics of COD regarding the people that they've already made some payments or they were able to service, their statistics are very low. But I'm sure, Chair, the issue here is about not reaching out to our people. I think, Chair, what needs to be done is use the very same powerful media that is lobbying our people to make our president to resign and make use of it very effectively to talk to our people about CCOD so that they can be able to come to know their offices. And those people who are far in the villages or in everywhere else, they will see that in the media, whether it is television or in the billboard, so that they can be able to come. Because sometimes, sometimes it's not worth it that you will have this powerful information and you will know that there are offices somewhere there and there is this OD, but our people don't know how to access those offices. So, Mina, I want to advise ECOG, which is the matrix of the leadership. Thank you, Bill. Just a few questions from my side and some comments. In terms of tracing,
Yes, the meeting that we're talking about, because yes, there was that meeting in Tata where we had to meet also the Chief of Labour, my minister, and myself, and parents, unfortunately some of them I think couldn't attend. It was also raises the challenges of tracing. And in that, there is a high level of corruption. High level of corruption, which I think the process that you are involved in, it may try to address it. And why we say high level of corruption is that now all of a sudden everybody is in the next network, in particular in the and there are people that are creating a confusion because those people in the rural areas and families of the former migrants can't afford anything. I would like you, if you have time, I don't know whether it's there's an area in the Eastern Cape, I'll tell you when there is a committee of people that are collecting money and saying they are going to assist the ex-migrants for them to get money because government is taking their millions of money. So I think what comrades, my apologies, what Honorable Naba is raising in terms of empowerment our people is going to be very important. Secondly, in terms of treatment and diagnosis, some of these people when they come back from mine, from when they have been either in affairs or whatever, in the mine workers, in mines, they are young, they can still work, some of them, they then go to urban areas. Now, in the process, they are going to develop some of these conditions when they are in P, I'm making an example, either in P or in Zanzibar, go to a public, ordinary public hospital or a GP. Is there a process of ensuring that some of the GPs or doctors are able to really, in diagnosing, be able to pick up that this is this condition that is then needed to be compensated for? Minister, I fully agree. Mine housing must pay. Mine housing, of course, we can't use the taxpayers' money when mine houses have got trillions, and therefore they are to take responsibility of their workers. But would it not be correct, Honourable Minister, that for people to really understand that which was practiced before of few whites that were compensated in terms of TB, how much were they compensated? That's to, for people to understand, so that people understand that when we say it is not correct, it is not fair for people to be compensated X amount of money for TB. Is it possible to, rather than to say it was only white workers, would it not be correct that at least they also that table, if it is possible to say in 1980 or 1991, a white miner was compensated X amount of money, so that people really see that there will be people who want to make an issue about it. Like to make it as if a government or whatever is making stories trying to, but when people really see that information, that is then going to be very important. The one-stop shop. That one-stop shop in the Eastern Cape, Honorable Minister, is entering attack. I'm also trying to think that the CCOG, the people that we met said their regional offices in Port Elizabeth, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know when it was not when. Now, you see, any money worker that is in Kingston is to travel to cut when they don't have money. That is why they become vulnerable. I'm not opposing to the one-stop shop. I'm just have a challenge on where it is located in relation to the Eastern Cape, which is vast, maybe other provinces of health, which is vast, but you can't be sure. There can be somebody from the one stop was once a mine worker, and a one stop shop is at Utapa, and that person has got no money. He will have to travel. Is there no way? It may be quite cumbersome, but I do think that. And the other thing, Minister, that we pick up, which now I must take that opportunity that you are here, I would appreciate if the Department of Health can again just play a visit and see how it is structured. Our commissioners have tried it, okay, but how it is structured in the human resource in that is quite a. So when we, I know it's part of the report of the oversight, but I'm being opportunistic here because we're talking about the ones of shops and their importance. We saw it. We had some challenges, some of us, in how it is structured. I think one of my colleagues is correct to say that at that time when we were there, there were no patients, mine workers, and it was quite alarming in an area like the former Tanzania, Utaja, and the surroundings. I thought that those are the areas that I would have loved to. I've been covered by the issue of the FPP, the reporting, and the non-compliance. What we will now do, which we usually do, is that we just take a 10-minute break for tea. In that, we are allowing the OG to see the structure, who is going to respond on what, and so that when we come back, you are well placed to respond to some of our questions. Thank you very much. 10 minutes break.
Thank you.
Did you say that before?
I think it was you. Yeah, that one.
Well, they tried to put some mathematical notation there, which is what they did.
There's an arrow there that goes backward. That's 1990 figure. It's for 20 years. 1990 backward. That means everything that happened before 1990 is put in that bar. So it's not performing for 1 year. The second one, if you look, there is also that. It's supposed to be less than, I don't know why, but it is backward. It's a 10 year. That means then from 1990 to the year 2000 is the second bar. Then performance started better after 2000. It started here. That's why then you see the smaller bar. Not that it was a drop of performance. It's now that we're no longer with you for 20 years or for 10 years. In order to increase them on the annual basis. That I'm sure that should have been explained. Unfortunately, it wasn't. Yes. The issue, Dr. Bolling, about the turnaround time until compensation, I'm leaving to Dr. Chitunasamy, please mark it. Your other question is the performance of the one-stop center. Since inception in 2014, April 2014, there were 4,000 mine workers which have been sitting in charge, and 3,000 in Carlton V. I think the last question also may be belongs there by the Honorable Chairperson about the fact that you went there, and Honorable Maizela also mentioned it, and did not find people. I also went there, I found very few people. It doesn't mean that all the time the one-stop center has full of people. We have seen 4,000 in the Mtata Center and 3,000 in Carlton V. But I want honorable members to understand. These are very new centers. Just to facilitate access. That doesn't mean that these are the only centers that we are utilizing. No, we just try to facilitate more access than it was in the past. And again, the question from the Honorable Chairman about what about people in PE, etc. Remember, before this one stop center, people had to travel to Bramfontein from all over the country. So, yes, they had to go to Bramfontein and present themselves. So, putting the one stop center is actually, as far as we're concerned, an achievement. It might not be what doesn't satisfy you, maybe that maybe we must put them in almost every city or every village. Even if we do so, if we have money, we won't get the staff to do so. People are going to Bramfontein. But the fact that they are one-stop centers, that doesn't mean that all the mine workers must go to Tata or Cartierville, etc. We actually even have 186 service providers around the whole country where mine workers can go. In the form of, they are, in other words, there are doctors who have been contacted as service providers who are waiting with them. Maybe let the doctors explain that how it works. So it doesn't mean that if you don't go to Tata, if you don't go to Carlton Village, if you don't go to Bramfontein, then the issue is closed. Because the 186,000 service providers are all over the country. But we just thought we needed a sophisticated center that is funded for by the state that can do many things, people at the same time. Because, for instance, the service providers who are in will only help to fill the forms in compensation. They won't be able to rehabilitate. They don't necessarily have spirometer, some of them, etc. But they will do the initial screening. But when you go to the one-stop center, you'll find spirometry there. They'll measure your alarm function. They'll measure everything. We are also the issue of audiology, which was, I don't know whether it's Dr. Wilmer James or Dr. Yes, about the issue of hearing, which is true. We are actually intending that there must be audiology equipment in the one-stop centers too. So it's just that the one-stop centers are very highly specialized centers, but service centers still exist and still are failing us. And I would like the doctors later on to explain to the members how it works so that they understand. Also in your work when you start helping us around. The legislation, what will be the role of, I'm sure So the question is, what will be the role of Parliament? We think the laws under which compensation happens in the country must change. In other words, we must have a new law that incorporates quieter and ordinary, and avoid having to divide a person into many parts. Imagine you are a mine worker, you get TB, then that must be compensated by the CCOD. But if you are left just unmutilated by a mine injury, then you must go to CCOD. Now you are suddenly able to run to different offices around the country when actually you are one individual, same being, Dr. Maizela, the issue of forcing uncontrolled mines to pay, it's not a matter of really forcing them. It's a matter of mineral resources doing their work. It's a matter of increasing the uncontrolled mines. It's a matter of sending inspectors there to inspect for risk and tell them that this is what you need to pay. That's all. Because if you confront them with that, if they don't do so, then it's illegal because it's in terms of the law. And we believe we have started something like that. We believe it was neglected in the past. Now we are starting it. The gene expert, Dr. Maizela, you said we must put the machine that screen TV. A gene expert is not a screening tool. Really. We said we must put it in every mind. A gene expert is not a screening tool. It's a diagnostic tool. That is screen. You diagnose TB. You have to give your sputum. If you have got no symptoms of TB, you are not coughing, you don't have sputum, the gene expert cannot help you. You have got to give your sputum. In the past, you give that sputum, we send it to the laboratory. They check it under microscope, it takes a week. With gene expert, you cough, you give the sputum, they put it in that machine. Yes, and then 2 hours later, it tells you that you have got TB or MDR. So it's really diagnosis, it doesn't screen. So we can't put everybody through it. But at any rate, the cartridges are extremely expensive, I must say. The reason that we still use it despite those expenses, which may come down later, you are aware that every technology that arrives in this world starts by being very expensive. And later on, your costs are controlled. At the moment, it's still on the expensive side. But the reason that we prefer it into microscope is that it has lessened the diagnosis of TB from a week to 2 hours, or from 3 months for MDR to 2 hours. But also, the issue of human resources, because especially in the field of health, is always human resources. Microscopy must be done by a person who has done medical technology, a 4-year degree, whereas gene expert, I can teach you. Even me, I was taught to do the gene expert within 10 or 15 minutes without being a medical technology. So we prefer it because of that. It has lessened the cost in terms of human being and cut the time. But in terms of the cost itself of the cartridge, it's still very high. So you can't just put any human being around as a form of screening. So in TB, and this matter is being discussed at an international level, unlike in HIV/AIDS, there is still something very disturbing missing in TB. I can't get into a village, call all the villagers and say, let's test you for HIV and AIDS. We've got a test kit. That is the test kit, which you know, which can be done by anybody, even lay counselors. We don't need that for TB. We still say TB. That's again, the big gap around the world. And in this new battle about TB, we are asking scientists, please find points of care technology. Not healthy. We are still using high-end machines like gene expert, like microscopy, which needs a lot of training. So I think you need to understand that gap. Honorable James, yes, we have already dealt with the issue of hearing loss. It is true. But in this regard, as Dr. Shipman Pami has told you, the president has put up this team under Minister Abe, which is dealing with rehabilitation of former mining communities. In that team, we see me as MC. And one of the issues I made is that the mistake we committed in the past, we must not allow them now. We must go and correct them. One of the things the Minister of Environment, for instance, is there. I said between her, us in health, and mineral resources, we need to come with new laws of prevention. For instance, the dark level, the noise level, those, you know, I even told the union that they also need to do their bit. They need to do their bit to push. For instance, when it comes down to TB, it's a very worrisome thing, which we are discussing also internationally. It doesn't seem to scare people. I went to MUM and showed them slides that in 2009, 80 mine workers died of rock falls. And we know about that, there was a lot of anger and activity. 80 died of rock falls. But in the same year, 1,200 died of TB. You hardly ever heard about it. And I showed it to them that actually the biggest fear of the members is TB. When you do your activities as unions, what have you done with TB? In other words, forcing the mining bosses for prevention. That your members must not get TB. What has happened? And many of them didn't do much, and I thought it's because they didn't know. But now that they know what's happening, still doesn't move them into action. But and I'm not really criticizing the issue of rock fall. It's an emotional thing when you die of a rock fall. But I'm just trying to show where many numbers are dying. But remember, it's not only the unions. It also happens to society in general. With due apology, honorable members, including yourself, by the way, I'm apologizing first so that I don't get weaved, you know? Yes, it's just how humanity acts around the whole world. Why am I saying including yourself? I'm saying this because I mentioned it when I was addressing Parliament, that when Ebola struck, the whole world moved, you know that. All the superpowers in the world moved. And I also repeated this in Washington when we were receiving the prize. Because that's the battle we're fighting. When Ebola struck, everybody moved, left, right, and center. During that period, you know, calling me here, you're worried. I still remember the sleepless night. Are you sure that was seen from Ebola? At the hospital, a few blocks, all the corners, some members of society were saying, we must take the army to the borders with Zimbabwe and block there. Nobody from the north must cross the river and come because we are in trouble. Professor Shabir Mali, who is the director of NICD, appeared with me on TV. He said, South Africans, please, I know you are scared about the border, you are hot under the collar, but please relax. You are not likely to get it, especially if you are not a health worker. He said, what you must worry yourself to death about, because he said, you're worried to death. Worry about TB. That is what chief South Africans call the border. That's the one that you must put your energies on and not sleep if possible and make a lot of noise. I still remember how people responded to him via Twitter. When he said, just because you are a professor, don't think we are fools, you know. We know what you're talking about, you are delivering us. One, he said, really, the thing is not ready for Ebola, and the professor is helping them to divert to TB, which we have been doing for ages. 12 months after the professor attached those ways, not a single South African died of Ebola, but 40,000 died of TB. And I announced that said, it still did not raise any temperatures anywhere. And what happened? Zika. You called me here immediately about Zika in Brazil. I'm not blaming, I'm just expecting you because it's happening all around the world. We have discussed this thing at an international level. When I was a member of the Stop Supernatural, even before being the chairperson, we spent 5 days in Washington finding out what is causing this phenomenon. We have got a disease among our meat, which is the biggest killer, but it doesn't touch humanity. Not even heads of state, the other diseases have already gone to high-level meetings of the United Nations, not TB. And that day when I was addressing you, I showed you that in the past 200 years, TB killed more people than HIV, Ebola, malaria, cholera, bubonic plague, influenza, polio, all added together. Add them all together and find the number of people they've killed. That total number is still less than what TB has killed. But when those diseases track, we all, and presently it's killing 1.5 million people. So we are begging And I'm sure you are aware, I'm also saying as the chairperson of Stopping Partnership, I was asked to try everything in my power, including the past 2 weeks we've been fighting that GP must go to G20. There's a G20 meeting which is being prepared. G20 must discuss TB. At the moment, even at the United Nations and World Organization, you know about antimicrobial resistance. Teams are being put together around the whole world to fight antimicrobial resistance. But one end of antimicrobial resistance, MDR-TB. Yes, TB, one end. But we are dealing with the other diseases which are contributing very little. Now, we don't understand this phenomenon. In 2013, we then went to Seattle, let's stop the partnership. We called experts around the world who specialize in marketing. Can they show us marketing strategies that will make the world move? When you talk about TB, because it's a big killer, but it's not making us move. So it's going to G20, we are planning. When I was in the US last week, we were planning to fight it so that it goes to United Nations General Assembly next year. You are aware that Ebola has been there, HIV has been there, all these major diseases have been there except TB. And that phenomenon is not clearly understood what's causing it. My own thinking is that it's because people with TB die very miserable, isolated there, somewhere in a corner. We've already forgotten about this person who was sick somewhere, and maybe because we don't see them, we don't feel them, we've long forgotten about them. We don't regard it as a fear factor. But actually, in our own country, 80% of people who are HIV positive, when they die, the cause is 80%. And the remaining other diseases like pneumonia, they only contribute 20% of them together. So it's a crisis, this issue of TB, but we are hoping now that we are trying to make noise. One of the reasons why I was choosing as a chairperson was that because the chairperson when I joined in 2010 was Professor Rifat Atun, who was at the London School of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene. He's now at Harvard. He's leading global health systems at Harvard. The then said, Minister, maybe let's use the professor. Let's choose a politician who must make noise. And that's why I'm making noise and attending. That's what I was elected for. They said, maybe we need someone who makes a lot of noise rather than professors who work with figures and numbers because maybe the world doesn't need him. So they elected me and said, please go about making noise. So understand me to be shouting at you to be making the noise with our instructed to do, and we think maybe if that happens, things will be better. That's why we didn't address it in Parliament. So Dr. James, we will look into this issue of Portugal. You said Portugal was the worst. No, you said they were professors in colonialism. I thought the French were, but I don't know. Maybe it depends on degrees. But we will go and look into them. Okay. Honorable Skonyan, how big is the problem of occupational disease? I will leave it to the honorable, to Dr. Kisna Bami here. But we think it's big. We've got about 17 million workers in South Africa who are exposed to occupational disease. Yes, 14 million in the formal sector today and 3 million in the informal. They are all exposed to occupational disease, but the problems we've been mentioning here, you understand, they are too big. With 17 million people, and I told you, the occupational specialists in both public and private are only 40 for 17 million people. So you can imagine the burden. It is a big problem that the country needs to solve. I even spoke to the mining bosses that they must help to sponsor students to do courses in occupational health. Dr. Chuana, the issue of separate mine workers from communities. We actually think the opposite. When I visited the mining house, had the number of them contract to believe. I found them far advanced in treating people, especially for HIV. It's a bottom dollar thing. If you've got lots of workers who are positive, who don't come to work, your productivity will fall. So they were treating them. My biggest problem was, my workers belong to communities, actually. They are not separate from communities. They are family members. If you are just alone in a corner living the family, you are not dealing with TB, because TB, unlike other diseases, the community disease, what do I mean? I can stand here alone and declare to the whole world that I want to get HIV positive. I know what to do. But I can't say the same about TB. I can't declare to anyone of you and say, me, I will never get TB. It's impossible. The only time I can make that is if I decide to stop breathing. Then I can declare that I will never get TB. But as long as I want to continue breathing, I'm exposed to it. So for that reason, it affects many people and want to treat as a community disease. So we were asking the mining house, can you stop treating mine workers and include communities? For instance, in 2011, we went for World TB Day with then Deputy President Khalema Mandandi to Carlton City. I was shocked the state of the art equipment I found there. State of the art in that small living for my workers. State of the art with everything, digital X-rays and all that. And my first question was, what about the community around Carlton City? Why only the mine workers? This community is also exposed. Not only communities are exposed, even health workers. For instance, one of the TB ambassadors is a doctor, Dr. Mutini, a lady doctor from Carlton B, who got XDR from patients in Carlton B. The extreme drug resistance, and you know the treatment rate for that is only 20%, the success rate. So she was looking at death just for treating patients, you know. So we said, mining house, state of the art equipment must be for everybody, because this TB that's generated in the mine is not going to affect the mine worker only. It's going to affect everybody. And lastly, doctor, let me just give you some of the things that get us. I gave you 66 that are daily affected by TB. 66, starting with the daily foods, etc. Among them, I mentioned Ujana Alati, I mentioned the Palale. I mentioned Beggarsport. If you look at the other districts, Carltonville, Liberty Bourgeois, Cheche Gamuna, there's a clear explanation. They were mining gold over the ages. Clear explanation. Because silica dust, which exposes people 6 times, 1,600% to TB, is found mostly in gold mines. Now, why in the city? You find Ghana, Alabega, Sports, and Paradise. There's no gold there. It's no gold at all. So what is the reason? Something, I don't have any clear scientific reason I'm postulating, but nobody has said I'm wrong. It's something that is scary. It means the mine workers that were losing the gold mines, because gold mines are closing, are migrating to those areas. And because one person with TB can infect 15 others, it means they're spreading it all over. If you go to Ghana, around Marigana, those mine workers are staying in the community. They are not confined to the mine. In fact, that has been discouraged long ago. So we want to integrate them. And at any rate, the World Organization has advised that we must stop institutionalizing people, even with MDR. They said we must start community services in MDR. We must send them to communities, especially when they start being infected. So for this reason, we have seen 200 deaths in the country who are able to initiate treatment for MDR in the absence of a doctor. Before it was done by doctors, but you said these nurses must be trained and certified and were trained by 200. We have now trained another 1,600 who must manage. In other words, once the 200 has initiated treatment, there must be 1,600 who manage this patient. Whereas in the past we have said, let's confine them to a center. We have opened 9 MDR hospitals in the country in 2011. But we believe the welfare organization said, no, that's not the way to go. Because you are going to put a person there for 18 months. And many people don't like it. That's when then they run away. or don't continue treatment. Because their normal life stops for 18 months, but if you integrate in the community, they go around with normal life, the stigma is also removed, they realize they are being accepted like any normal human being, but when they are robbed, they believe now nobody wants me, and they find a way to escape and not continue treatment. We also see 150 injection teams. That means a team that consists of a professional nurse, two or three community health workers, and one lay counselor, which goes around in those who need injection. Ordinarily, people believe if we give injection, they've got to come to a hospital. No, we've got 150 teams that are going around the villages giving injection there, especially streptomycin, which is one of the injections of choice when you've got multi-drug-resistant TB. So the integration is very important. And lastly, around Sunday, I think it's one of the questions, but let me answer it here. Around Sunday, we've already called this conference, you might have forgotten, in 2016. We called a conference in Johannesburg of ministers of labor, ministers of health, ministers of finance, and ministers of mineral resources in the whole circuit, and said this TB is now in this whole region, is across the border, the most affected region in the world, started. How do you deal with it? South Africa provided the mine, but also TB. You provided the labor and you go away with TB. We can't just ignore the fact. And so we said, let's have a conference. And in that conference, we said there must be three outcomes. One, we need one common database for everybody in Sudan who acquired TB in the mine. They must appear on the common database, which I can read from somebody in Zimbabwe, can read from Minnesota, and say these are the people who work in a mine and got TB, and where are they? We need that common database. Two, we need a common treatment protocol. They are still different, believe me. We've got mine workers in South Sudan who are in Swaziland. They started treatment in the mines here in South Africa. They are no longer within the mines that are in Swaziland. But when they need treatment, they run back to South Africa. And when you ask them the treatment in your own country, they believe no, the treatment in the mines in South Africa is superior. They look for money literally to come back here. And we're saying, and that it's true that they are treated differently. In other words, the drug regime in Swaziland is different to South Africa. And we said, no, that's not good. We need a common treatment protocol so that when I'm here, or I'm in Lesotho, etc., we know people are giving the same drug. Lastly, the issue of referrals. We don't have it yet. Who refers to whom? If a mine worker is working in South Africa, has got TB, he's charged to Lesotho, and he sent the family, who takes responsibility for whom? Is it my responsibility? Is it the responsibility of the mining house in South Africa? Is it the responsibility of the Minister of Health in Lesotho? When we start debating, am I the one who must warn the Minister of Health in Lesotho that you have got somebody TB who got it in the mind of South Africa, take care of them or follow up the family? Because if we don't follow up families, we won't win. Like here in correctional services, when we find somebody TB, we must find the family. Even though they give us wrong addresses, but we don't, yes, they do. We don't lose hope. We just keep on creating and find nobody there or no address where we'll be given. But we believe that's the nature of people who commit crime. We always lie all the time. But we still try to follow up. Is there a family somewhere which can see? So the same as mine workers. Is there a family in the suit? What do we do with them? And once we find that family, who takes responsibility of feeding them? That issue is under discussion. The Organization for International Organization for Migration, IOM, once in our conference, they got involved in this issue. They said it's a problem around the whole world. The World Bank came in, the Global Fund came in, they even gave us 60 million rand and said, once you integrate, the 60 million rand will help you in Sudan. So the World Bank, IOM, World Organization, they are all interested in this sector and they are very eager about it. That's why 2 weeks ago, when we had World TB Day, the Commissioner for Social Affairs for African Union came in and asked us that we must have a joint program They want South Africa to be, become a leader in the fight about TB, not only within South Africa, in the whole continent. You know, so these organizations are saying we need something that is international in order to fight together, and that means integration, not separating people. The other about performance not tolerating honorable Tishmatala, Dr. Tishmatala will answer it, and the issue of annual report about the graphs I've already answered to. That's as far as I have mind. And the accessibility to one stop center. Honorable Matanela, we understand your accessibility to be about communities. We are a bit worried about that. This is a specialized thing, specifically to pick up somebody who needs to be compensated. We did not think it wise to operate communities, but we believe if anybody in the community needs any health service, the normal health care system must still help them. Because otherwise, almost everybody will then run to the one-stop center and move away from clinics and make them unworkable. They are specific for mine workers because we need to create this path that happens to them. But if a family of a mine worker is found to be having TB in one way or the other, the normal public health care mechanism ought to come into the fore and help. Otherwise, we'll increase what honorable chairperson has said. We expected the chairperson that everybody, if they know now there's compensation, they'll start claiming that they work in the mine. That's why we need so much information with Dr. Matam spoke about. And are unable even to pay people who actually work in the mine just for lack of information, because we're not sure whether we're being the right people. In fact, what I think is close to you, part of the reason we suspect why CCOD was in shambles. He suspects why the people were waiting there before Natale and the new team came in. Why they allowed the shambles? We suspect they were not stupid. It was easy to see when there are shambles, no records, no nothing. Yes, it was very easy because we have discovered that some of the people who claim compensation have got nothing to do with the mine. Yes, of course. I mean, where there's a lot of money, we've got 1 billion rand here. And we believe the reason that they could not even move to improve it is not because they were fools. They knew what they were doing. If you improve it and make sure that the records are computerized, they are in order, you can fix any person, it becomes impossible. And I don't have proof for that, but that's what we found this way looking in. How could this CCOD have been so neglected? What was the reason? What were the people waiting there? What were they doing over all these years? And we came to the conclusion that it was easy for them. To the extent where, I'm sure you're aware, it happens in other spheres of government. My biggest belief is that people, or government entities, or public entities, which get disclaimers, some of them is not because they are foolish. Because a disclaimer is regarded as someone who's foolish, who can't keep their finances. It doesn't carry the word corruption. So let me see and not make records available. They will say I'm stupid, it's a disclaimer. When actually I was stealing. And that so the best way to do that is record. That's why I'm a firm believer in that people who get disclaimers must actually be punished. But you never made that law in parliament. They must be punished and be found guilty of corruption. But in parliament, the disclaimer is just now. You know, an ADC can change a disclaimer 3 years in succession. And we just keep on saying no disclaimer. I believe it must be a criminal offense because I saw it in CCOD. So this issue of people stealing whenever there is money is a very big problem. It's a pandemic that we need to stop. The issue of accessing neighbors, I've already explained that we are working with the minister. There's another issue. I need to add something here. Again, that issue of not being scared of. When we met these ministers and they came in last number, I gave them this statistics about TB and what TB is doing. Guess what? I discovered that most of them were more interested in compensation. And they said, so, what I'm here to fetch compensation, where is it? And in that conference, we did not even, the main item was not compensation. We just took Dr. Tishmatala to that conference, just for 10 minutes, to explain about this compensation, because you are self-earning. And they said, that's what you're looking for, to get money and go. And that's what people are dying, they are spending TV. And unfortunately, it goes back. That's why I'm saying it's a human illness which we don't understand. Why would they see the fear of that people are spending TV in their country? And the only thing will be hit when we need to have it with compensation. So when you go for 10 minutes, they were disappointed.
Yes.
Excellency, I really came here because I was sent to bring compensation money. Where is it? Now, what surprised me is that these fires were not yet done, the 105,000. We have now done them, and we can't find the people. Don't you think that's ironic? How many have we paid? Out of 105,000, since last year we paid 50. The others we can't find. Then I'm asking myself, these ministers who came here from all over Sasek and said we are coming to fetch compensation, where are they? I do understand, because in the list of names, I said that people from Portugal, Spain, I don't think it's going to be very easy for us to go there and try to fix them. No, we need to be very cheap, so we can't do anything about that. But those who are around Sasek, I thought they would see them running in large numbers. Now we've got a group of ex-mine workers in Eastern Cape. As you say, they are making people pay money. They were here many times. They're claiming that no, there is no access, our people are poor, and they need to be paid for transport. And I discovered why. They want to offer Kumbis, and we pay them. And said, I brought people to China, pay me. So that becomes a new ecology altogether of giving people money for running a transport city. That's not compensation. Because as I'm saying, when people hear this money, they always try all the other things. But up to today, the very same group which claims so that we are ex-mine workers, we represent people, they are paying. They tell me, they are paying. If you just put money here, we'll transport them. But after 1 year of launching, even with unions, and telling them there are 105,000 people, we are only able to pay 300. The others, we don't know where they are. And that's the problem that we are still facing. The issue of GPs, Honorable Chairperson, you asked, are GPs aware of this issue of compensation? I told you 186 of them are assistance providers, but any person who is a doctor ought to be able to know before you treat any disease, you go into and medical school is teaching people, even though they don't necessarily need it because of technology blinding us. That usually constitutes 50% of the diagnosis of the disease. Don't run in and with a telescope and X-ray machine, sit down and visit and take a paragraph. If you do that, you are already 50% to what diagnosis. That's what medical school. And if a person arrives at the GP's practice and the GP says good history, they will be able to detect this information that this person works in the mine between this year and that year and develop a high index of suspicion. But if a doctor believes even before you sit down, he's already having the telescope in the ear before you even sit down, because that's what some of our colleagues are doing, then they will never get this because they may get nothing in your chest. But you are hitting my head everything. And any good, well-trained doctor must be able to know that. That's why I usually, during graduations, when medical students are graduating, I tell them that medicine is an art. It's not only a science, it's an art, which you must practice like an art. And secondly, I tell them, don't have a tendency of calling people patients. They are human beings. It's a mother. It's a father. It's a wife. The chairperson of the committee, the political leader, the member of parliament, somebody where people depend to. It's a social being. And integrate all that in that human being, then you'll see them better. So what if people don't practice that art, believe you me, many of these mine workers will be with you. They won't even know, they'll just see an old man with emaciated coffee and their chest is not doing very well and listening with a telescope and his diagnosis mechanical. But if they were to take paradigm, they would then understand that this is the problem of mine. This was a migrant worker, and this is what happened to them. The issue of how much where white workers compensate it. I think it's a good question you need to research. I don't think we've got that here. You've seen here we're trying to couple information together. I don't think that information is easily available. I think I've answered most of the questions I needed to. I'll give to the other. Oh, yes. You see, Dr. Bowling asked about who's accountable. Yes. Well, I must tell you, there was a portfolio committee meeting. We said I must go and look for people who, after the cabinet took the decision, that CCOD must go to labor, and the Minister of Labor said, no, seek, please put it to good health, and they just abandoned it. The people who were in charge at that time, they are gone. There's a resolution that I must go and look for them and punish them. I still don't know by what mechanism. Maybe I'm the one who must be punished. Because I was not there, and many of them have left, are no longer public servants. I don't know what the mechanism of looking for somebody who was a public servant before and put them through a punishment mechanism of the public service. So the portfolio committee gave me a very big job which I'm not able to exercise, but I'm just warning you, it's not for the first time. It did come from the portfolio committee, and they made that ruling. And I must confess, I'm not telling it out. I don't even know where to start, where to look for them, and when calling them. Unless maybe it's a criminal offense, where you're taking them to a police station and police arrest them. So it's quite a pity. But also then, the next question will be, why only those who came in during the era of democracy? Why is the portfolio going to talk about the people who are in health around that? When these problems started in the city? What about those who caused this problem over all these years? Will it be justice to say, okay, during the era of democracy, you were a DG or DPG, will punish you? When I'm giving you that, these files we are dealing with, we've got those who have been there in 1960, and nobody looked into them. So we rather believe our best forward motion, rather than trying to go and lead things in the park, which will take resources and time and eventually arrive at no answer. Can we stop this from happening so that in future we don't sit here and get faced with this type of problem? The top day before Dr. Kitna comes in, can you explain this mechanism of what the DT, the service provider, how do they work? How do you interact with them around the whole country? Yes, Dr.
Sorry, Dr. I would have to request that because we have eaten into almost close to 45 minutes today, next presentation. I'm not saying we must not do that, but if we can just be.
Can you run out of the door? I should be.
Maybe quickly I can say doctors we deliver Africa, and in a committee we've got about 3 minimum doctors with 1 chair, or a maximum of 5 doctors with 1 chair. So, and we have doctors that are from private who are paid by the bureau. So between that, and I think we're comfortable. Doctors are not conflicted. You won't find one doctor from one mine. And we have radiologists who support us to do ILO classification, and then we just confirm it's based on the International Labour Organization classification of the chest X-ray. So when you do permanent disability, it should be based on that. So you allocate disability based on that. Thank you.
Separately, quite a few since our time is very quick, so very quickly, just for a bit of the explanation, we think there are ethical guidelines coming in, while the industry has come to the party supporting us, but I had a collapsed certification system, so there was either no certification system or at least move on this process. And I discussed with the minister, we made rule changes and he's working with the framework. And as the Dr. Charlie pointed out, the four member team, there's reviews, etc., etc. And I haven't yet gone in and done a post ad hoc review, but I trust that within the system that the ethics still apply to the report. Of course, there's a bigger discussion we are having with the minister about the future of an occupational system for the country, which leads to the elimination of compensation in different from an occupational health system. The minister is still working through some of the processes within the NHI framework. about what would be the future of the health of workers in South Africa. So it's a discussion we are starting, but my immediate task as a commissioner is to deal with this hard legacy problem affecting my workers while we are discussing future issues about the health of women, health of HIV positive people, the health of workers. So Minister is not going to do away with the health of workers as a constituency in terms of the prevention aspect, which you mentioned, but he's saying that we are putting that as a priority. So that's a wider discussion. We'll come back to you about the office, our system, about health professionals, how we fit in within a future framework. But the USP should be sorting out some of these issues. So the Medical Certificate Committee, I'm convinced that overall in charge, there are these operating ethics and this is what we've done. So let's start very quickly, Chairperson. The first issue was about the everyday change that is called the iceberg phenomenon that the Honorable Member has raised. The big issue is that we have a current thing of about 200,000 claimants in the CTOD and 500,000 claimants in the MDOD. So if you take that grouping, that's 700,000. We will say that 50% have died, so we're dealing with 350,000 living. Of the 350,000 living, 50,000 might be only second degree. If you're second degree, then I don't have to work with you anymore. Because the law in touch is morally incorrect, but legally, you move into what's called the archive. So there are, if you take the tip of the iceberg, there are 300,000 people that either have TB or third degree. Therefore, they have to have medical examination because they might have moved from TB into first degree, and they might have moved from third degree into second degree, technically. So that's the first issue in terms of the current database of 300,000 that we need to deal with. The other issue is the ex-mine worker population of between 800,000 to 1 million. And that's the biggest issue that we're trying to use to solve on the database. So you're quite correct that this is a big issue that's facing us as we take it forward. And in terms of productivity, we didn't describe it, I didn't put it up, but this is the average age of claim since examination to certification. So we are looking at some new models. If I remove TB out of the process, it drops my framework down by 50%. Remember, when I manage TB slightly differently, it's loss of caring for TB. So if you take 2007, the claims paid in 2007 had a lag time of 20 months since examination, when the medical examination was done, and a lag time of 15 months when from certification. And you can see productivity didn't improve over the years. Now this is data we are tracking now. We never used to have this data before to track. And you can see we're beginning now to start tracking it. I came on board around about 2013. There were some major problems that came with the amalgamation of the two systems, getting to get record keeping. But you can see we're slowly chopping it down. I mean, it was at the height of 60 months from examination and 50 months from certification. But you can see now we're slowly chopping it down. And as new teams come in and we get to a much more electronic database, we can pull this together. So this is not the productivity issue. But the tip of the iceberg is that we probably deal with 300,000 living ex-mine workers that need to be having a benefit medical examination. And your guess in terms of the unknown is related to the wider issues we want to work with about how to, as we improve the one-stop service delivery, work with neighboring countries, how do we actually bring more people into the system. Accountability, Minister Delford, one-stop service performance, we agree, it's not ideal. We are working through multiple GPs on the ground, training of primary care products, providers on awareness raising. But the key area was looking at a combination of mobile. So I mentioned we're discussing with Autumn at the moment, which has a global fund grant that's dealing with very mining communities, about our using those mobile units to go and do benefit medical examination. We're launching such a portal in Kuruman in May. We do one mobile visit in May in start of the process, and we're looking at eight mine workers in Swaziland Minister with a mobile unit, and we are discussing with the Swaziland government because the neighboring countries are very concerned that we are setting up these service deliveries for South Africans. What about their countries, given that 1 in 3 mine workers are being non-South Africans? So one of the issues that we are discussing is put and subjectivity with that process about service deliveries. And as we improve awareness, the issue was strengthened the center. Because it wasn't us just doing the examinations of the therapy. Because if the documents are provided in the therapy and the center has collapsed, then people are losing hope that I went for my medical examination, but I didn't hear from the bureau in Johannesburg or the consultation office. So we are tracking the entire system and the entire electronic database. And let me just spend some time to just show you that very quickly. This is the electronic database. It might be very small for the people at the top. So we have it here at the top by claim type, which is asbestos, cancers, etc. It's by degree, third degree, second degree, etc. It's paid or not paid, etc. We can get down, and we also have it, if I go further down, by district. So we can now go to Maseru, And we can see that there were 5,000 claimants from Nestle in the 200,000 database. 735 are all the documents present. 10 didn't have bank details, etc. Now I can actually click on the 10, and hopefully it'll work. It'll actually pull out the names of those without their bank details. I'm just doing it for, this is a proper database now that they're putting up. And that's where we want to go after in terms of the tracking and tracing and putting up systems. So it's actually got out the names of the individuals in Matsuru who don't have bank details. And I can do that for Amazon Kulu, Taban Kulu, Maputo, Ninambani, etc. So that's the substitution. Of course, please, this must not be recorded because this is live information that I'm working at the day. We can go summary by employer. Now, these are the things that the minister talked about that we never had before in terms of the electronic database, and that significant pushback by our staff that did not want us to go to the electronic system. I can say there were 38,000 workers that came from Anglo-Polish Shanti, and I can actually pull out the names down. And chairperson, we actually have the scan records as well. So this is the progress we've done today to get to district, sub-district, etc. in terms of the process. Right, so yeah, let me just get back into some of the general business. So the legislation, Social Protection Minister starts with that. There was a big issue around noise engineering laws from Dr. Jane. And noise engineering laws is covered through QIDA. But we are working jointly with them in terms of the QIDA process and the minor safety act. There was a big issue around the quantification of the problem. So I pointed out 300,000 currency was out. Probably between 800,000 and 1.2 million ex-mine workers. But we're doing outreach activities, jointly with Deputy Minister Oliphant and Deputy Minister Tasha and Deputy Minister Olomisa. And we've actually, in Kosi Olomisa, and we've actually done a lot of activities. There is a whole program that's in place for the year in terms of outreach activities where we're bringing people into the system. So that will give us some ideas about the issues about the quantification. And we're hoping to parliament and constituency officers. We want to prepare pamphlets, etc., in multi-languages and to also offer this to Asia. There was a big issue around the fact about the APP and, you know, is it a wasted exercise? I have been prepared, I present reports on a monthly basis to the department. We're in a bit of a problem in terms of the reporting. The first issue is that the compensation fund needs the audited financial statement and the annual report to go together. And we pointed out the difficulties with that. And hopefully by September this year we'll have got over that level. But we are quite willing on a monthly basis to the Department of Health. There are some of my indicators reported to the Department of Health, strap plan and annual performance plan. And this afternoon, you might find some elements of that, but we do report to the branch. On a monthly basis, I report on these indicators to the branch. On a quarterly basis, to the branch. And we'd be quite willing, Chairperson, if asked, I'm quite happy to come, on depending on the schedule of meetings, to come and present to you on our quarterly performance, monthly performance, etc. I've not been requested to come before, and I do apologize if members have not felt that we have not done all of this. So we'd be quite willing to come in as part of the regular reporting to talk about the four elements, noting that the first elements are not being paid fully, about quarterly reports, annual reports, etc. In terms of the annual reports, we do have annual reports that are prepared for the 10-11 financial year. I'm busy with the 11-12 financial year in preparation for the financial report, but we can make that available in job form. The big issue previously that our audit and risk committee has raised is that they don't have independent auditors. And that's been the problem, because the commissioner can come and say, this is what we agreed, this is their performance in the one-stop service. But if you didn't have independent auditors, then there was a concern about that. But let's go to that chairperson, and I'd be quite happy to come and present to the portfolio committee as an oversight committee whenever you call us to come and present, as you did with the ABC. So let's take it as done in terms of that process. So I don't think it's in vain. We do have to say this interaction with the portfolio committee as a very important process, notwithstanding the past 2 years of coming and presenting to yourself. Tracking and tracing, Dr. Wooters, do you want to keep this that way? That is a major progress that we're taking on, or tracking and tracing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's at least five government departments. It's an issue that we've got support from the Chamber of Mines. I'm paid by Harmony Gold as one of the secondees as per Dr. Kitchener's under the economic active radar screen. People that never went for RICA, people never went for FICA. That's our people, and that's the 103,000 of our ex-employees that we're reaching out. I think that's all for now, and willing to participate as Dr. Kitsnasami promised.
So, the Tech Exchange is a major project. We are engaging at multiple levels and are supposed to succeed in that program. Including World Bank has given us funding for employing ex-mine workers that will also assist us with what we call last mile, specifically going to villages now that we've got the data listed. The Honourable Member also raised the issue around the issues of the lack of staff in the personnel. This slide is saying that we don't have certain professional staff that will help us with analysis, except I don't have posts. Because remember, I have to come back to the ministry and the DG for money. So this is the main issue around this slide versus, so it's professional staff that do analysis, do database management, help us with legal. There's a lot of legal concerns as well that have come through. Actually, so these are all outsourced activities. And many of them, I've got 619 doctors that are coming. So if we didn't have this additional support that was coming. So when we go to the slide on the personnel, this is mainly administrative staff that are dealing with it. And the bulk of our personnel are meticulous, as the minister pointed out, until they raise the status at the chief director level at the moment, which is the current post that I occupy as compensation commissioner, that we actually have very few people in. Mr. Masungan is the newly appointed director of finance, who only came in November last year. So we are beefing up the system, and that's the issue around the gap between what I'm calling about the lack of professional inputs on a range of analytical and support versus general administration. So that is the key point. Chairman, I think we've more than covered both of the other things, and thank you to the honourable members and yourself for participation, and the minister for something like that.
Chair, just a few things that I wanted to add. I won't say what I mean. The first one, I think your question was raised, and I want to ask the minister and honorable members. A question was raised around the issue of social justice. When a minor is dying, we do definitely pay to the family. So it doesn't mean that's the end of the story. And on the issue of the minister touched on the issue of non-controlled mines, but also we've got a challenge of controlled mines that are not compliant. We can guarantee that we are following up in the quarter ending in December. We've recovered back payments up to 10 million. And if we go back, probably by now we've collected close to 10 million. So we are working on that. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. It has been quite a very long but informative and obviously an emotive subject. I think as control of committee that has been given a responsibility on health issues by this city administration, we have to ensure that we make the follow-ups. We will definitely call you. We still have to check and see who are people that we called, which I think that is very important. Well, it's not for the benefit of ourselves, whatever, but it's certain issues of addressing the issues of injustice, addressing the issues of corruption, and addressing all perceptions that are there. And in fact, I think when we undergo that process, I will have to request that if you find that X who has corrupted, they must be named and changed. They must be named, whoever must be named and changed, so that people really see that they are being taken for a ride. Thank you very much. We have taken a whole hour or so from the next presentation, but I think they will really understand. Thank you very much, Minister. I don't know whether you're still going to join us or you're coming in the afternoon of your lunch.
Okay.
Thank you.
The people who are coming here are fiercely independent. They don't want to be in the coming soon.
Thank you very much, Monica. The next stretch just to another issue. Thank you.
comes up to more of you is much more aware than our people.
Good afternoon. My name is Harry Fonik. I'm a member of the portfolio committee.